Hello, hello. This is Ladies with Gumption, episode 76, The Blame Game. I am entering today. My name is Jessica, and I am here with...
May.
And Tatiana.
And we are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. You can contact us on Twitter at DCTVGumption. You can send us an email at ladieswithgumption@gmail.com. Or you can send us an ask on Tumblr, ladieswithgumption.tumblr.com. You can listen to our past episodes on iTunes, Google Play. We are now on Spotify, so Spotify us. We are still on Facebook, and we also have a Patreon now if you would like to support continuing the future of Ladies of the Gumption podcast. It costs money, so if you feel the need to support us and you like what we have to say about DCTV, then feel free to do that. Patreon.com/DCTVGumption. If you don't want to support for free, get nothing in return, we also have a Redbubble page where you can support us while also receiving stuff. We have one design up already, and eventually, once we start getting some more time, we'll be able to put up a couple of different more designs so you have variety in how you'd like to support us and also receive stuff. Let's see. And you can get a link to what's on our Podomatic page, May? The Patreon or the Redbubble?
The Patreon. Link.
So you can do that as well. In DCTV news, Titans got the whole family together, the whole Deathslade family together. We have Chella Man that was cast as Deathstroke's... What did I say? Deathslade. Deathstroke. Last week, we told y'all about the casting announcement for Slade, and now it's Slade, right? Slade.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not...
His name is Slade Wilson.
His name is Slade Wilson. Okay, I'm not a completely idiot. So this week we have announcements for both of his kids. Chella Man has been cast as Deathstroke's son, Jericho, and Chelsea T. Zhang has been cast as Rose Wilson, aka the Ravager, in season 2 of the Titans. So I find this like really cool, just as like the castings themselves. Jericho is Death in the comics, and he's being played by a Death actor. And then Chelsea Zhang looks great. I like that they're all characters of color, and that is, I don't know what, is S.A. Morales?
Hispanic.
And so, obviously, it's like a Latino,
mm-hmm.
Asian mix, which is kind of cool, because that's something that you don't usually see. Also, any other thoughts on those two first castings, or what this means for Titans, if it makes you more or less excited?
It makes me more excited. I'm definitely hoping that we get to see, like, some real interactions between this family unit, and that they are more important than, say, Trigon was last season. I'm just a little concerned, maybe, about how they're going to incorporate all of those characters, because we still got every character from season 1. Plus Connor.
And then we have Connor.
Yeah. Plus Connor. Plus the Wilson family. And Trigon's still not wrapped up. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing about them having a lot of characters and trying to figure out what's what.
I feel like I would feel more excited about it if Titans was written like Doom Patrol, where everyone gets their little piece of cake. Mm-hmm. And gets to shine.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Like, it's definitely, I think, promising. I'm kind of in, like, Batwoman territory, and that we had all of those diverse casting announcements for Batwoman, but then you have, like, the showrunner, and you're like, oh, I don't know. So it's just, like, cautiously optimistic, but, like, suspicious.
Right.
Suspiciously optimistic. So moving into some abbreviated feedback, starting off with Tasha. And her review of Arrow Starseed 2040, she says that she really enjoyed this episode, which is saying something because she's not usually a fan of episodes with very little Oliver, but she liked the flash forward storyline. It kept a good pace, the emotional beats hit, it thread together the scenes we've gotten so far and answer a lot of questions while setting up intrigue. Plus, the action scenes were great. That being said, this felt very much like a backdoor pilot to Black Star Star City 2040 show, which, considering Beth's new WB deal, seems like a possibility. It would totally on brand for Arrow to be used to launch not one, but two spinoffs in its final full season. I find it very interesting that last spring, Steven said all Oliver had left to do is leave a legacy, and not only do we get an episode that's promoted, A Hero's Legacy is Born. Oh, sorry. And now we get an episode that's promoted here, A Hero's Legacy is Born. Honestly, Kat McNamara is perfect casting. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. She looks just like Emily. She's got, like, Emily's vibe. She's got Steven's vibe, and I think it's perfect as well. And then Tasha says she also had, like, the archery and fighting training to do her own stunts. Plus, she comes with a built-in audience from her previous show, Shadowhunters. So, and she also noticed that they have the FTA, or Future Teen Arrow, actors doing a lot of, like, the promotion and live tweeting. So it's got her kind of thinking that maybe this could be, like, a backdoor pilot to launch off, like what the Vampire Diaries has, like, legacies. So this would be, like, Arrow's legacies kind of thing. So, about the show itself, obviously, she's happy that Felicity Spoke is alive in 2040. We've been new. One of her favorite things will always be the relationship built between Felicity and William. So using William's picture as her screensaver in her secret room hit her in the feels. William and Mia sniping at each other totally reminded her of Oliver and Thea. Also, William tried to use make a smoke woman his assistant, and I died, she says. She feels like the Felicity parallels between Oliver and Felicity are strong with William and Mia. And then Connor's complete and total lack of patience for their shenanigans reminded her of Diggle. So it's kind of like a really cool, you know, look into the future. Aunt Nyssa training Mia, love that. She's very intrigued by Smock and Hook, which is Mia and Connor. Still want to know where JJ is.
She's MIA.
Predictably not shocked that Renee was genuinely shady and wanting to blow up the city.
hey now.
Kevin Dale, of course, and then some of her predictions, and this is a really abbreviated cut, and like the full review will go on Tumblr, but some of her predictions is that Renee's gonna die, and that Eating Corp is a shell company for Dante, is like Dante's company, so that would tie back into the present, and she thinks that Roy is Lazarus Pit crazy, hence the rage blackout and isolating himself on me and you, which is very interesting. And she also has hope that Oliver's still alive. I don't know about that one, because I'm banking on the fact he dies, but, but, you know, Tasha's usually right, so we'll see. Moving on to Shang, who had feels for Supergirl and Black Lightning, I think. His Supergirl feedback, he loves Lena Luthor in a suit, it gave him his rights. John Cryer really surprised him. Lex was such a little shit. And to his sister, and he loves Lex already. He knew Lena was going to use the serum on James. Pretty sure something is going to fuck up, so both him and Lex would have powers for drama's sake. I totally agree. And he thinks that we're going to the final stage of the season, and it's looking real delicious. I can see it being a super and a Luther with the military versus a super and a Luther with the military, which is really, that's kind of cool, because, like, Lex has Russian Supergirl and the... I was going to say Markovian, but it's totally not Markovian. But, you know, it's not Russia either. But it's like the Ukraine or something. I can't remember.
Oh,
but
yeah. Anyway. It's there's something with a Stan in it.
Anyway, that versus Lena and Kara and the DEO, which is, that would be kind of cool. I was not too sure how he felt about the Brainiac kiss. I didn't like that Nia kissed Brainiac while he was vulnerable. I know it's a common trope, but it made me feel uncomfortable. Brainiac was clearly having a form of anxiety attack, and the kiss did not come up as romantic at all. And he's kind of kicking himself that he threw out there that he was evil because she turned out to be evil. He's like, I should have just sat there, evil too. And then for Black Lightning overall, he said it really didn't meet his expectations. He really enjoyed season one a lot and thought that season two fell flat. Ships-wise, he thinks that basically the Black Lightning writers looked at Supergirl and Caramel and said, hold my beer. he didn't really find Khalil redeemable and not sure how he feels about him coming back, but he also thought that it was not a smart move to ignore Thundergrace. It felt as though they had cut out many scenes for them and the relationship felt very jerky. He was a little disappointed that Grace didn't have as much screen time as he thought she would. He's like, I finally have a bisexual Asian hero to look up to, and I'm sad we did not get more. So, and overall, he would give this season 6.5 out of 10 volts. Content-wise, and 7 out of 10 volts. Hero-wise, and 7.5 out of 10 volts. Villains-wise, and I just love that he used volts as his rating system, yeah. So I think that's cool. Yeah. I think, I guess, like, arrow would be, like, arrows, obviously, or quivers out of 10, and then flash would have, like, lightning rods or something, I don't know. Anyways, before I come up with the whole rating system for the DCTV, moving on to Paulina. Paulina, she says, hope you've had a good week. I have. Had a really nice week. Thank you for the comment. She says their podcast is becoming the highlight of DCTV for her, even more so than watching the actual shows.
And so sweet and sad.
Yeah. But really sweet. But thank you. She has thoughts for Black Lightning. Oh, all the shows, I think. So she thought Black Lightning was a pretty strong season finale, and especially for a season which has been qualitatively up and down. She really thought it was strong. I love seeing Jefferson break down towards the end, overwhelmed by the feeling of happiness. And it was such an important scene for tearing down toxic masculinity and allowing male characters to feel and cry and to express their emotions, which I agree, that was nice. She loved Jennifer suiting up, and seeing her go against Tobias was incredible, but she loved that Jefferson was able to, like, talk her down and work that out, because it was just a beautiful display of father love to his daughter. Again, this abbreviated version of the feedback, all of the rest of the full content of the feedback will go on the Tumblr, but moving into, like, the Flash, she said, you know, she wishes that Nora's exposure, that scene had between her and her parents alone. I feel like there just wasn't enough time to react to the entire team, with the entire team standing around them. Having said that, Grant, Candace, and Jessica all brought the emotions in that scene, and Barry really raced ahead and locked Nora in the pipeline. I honestly expected that reaction from him, even if it seems a bit extreme. And she's like, let's see what else she says. Iris interviewed Camilla for a photographer position at Central City Citizen, so hooray. We're finally getting some good stuff on the citizen front. Plus, I am here for Iris and Camilla developing a friendship. Thank you, Paulina. Moving on to Cheyenne. Cheyenne, she says she hopes his email finds us all doing well. Thank you, Cheyenne. She can't, I guess she's not caught up on Black Lightning yet, but she can't wait to watch it so she can give her feedback for season 3. For The Flash, she really enjoyed this episode from start to finish. Was so happy to see Sherlock's storyline regarding Nora comes to a spectacular end with the big reveal. Figured they would wait for until the end of the episode to do the big reveal and then keep us hanging for 4 weeks. Clever show. Anyway, I was so glad Nora got exposed, not simply for confessing. And that's something her confessing as the synopsis suggested. I just felt like after weeks of watching Sherlock piece together the puzzle for it not to be him to reveal everything would have irritated me to no end, because that meant that he served no purpose this entire season. Which, that is a point. There are things at that point.
Yes.
That will probably be discussed, but that is a point. That he had to reveal it, because otherwise, what was his purpose? She also said...
His purpose was to find Cicada.
Right. He should have gone home after that, but that's okay.
She says she felt bad for Nora, but also felt like she should have not put herself in that position to begin with, especially since she found out that Reverse Flash killed her grandmother like episodes ago. That should have been where she drew the line instead of working with him, knowing what he did. She loves Grace Cada. Grace Cada is off the chain. That woman cray cray. She killed her uncle. She's like, no, this is the kid I can get behind. No mercy, no remorse. She's a stone cold killer. She was glad to see Iris progressing a bit with her newspaper, and she liked she understood the storyline between Cisco and Camilla and him wanting to separate the work life and the personal life. But she brings up a good point. She says, yet him not wanting to bring Camilla around the people that he considers family, now that they've made it official, just kind of begs the question of why he hasn't taken care yet. If the whole problem is him being a meta that's keeping him from, you know, connecting these two parts of the lives. Like, why is he still, you know, if he's hellbent on having this normal life, then what's the hold up for taking the cure? Which I thought was a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
The full content again will go on to the Tumblr. But our last feedback with Gumption is from Mara. And Mara says, hello ladies, I hope you're all doing well. I love that they all hope we're doing well.
Yes, I'm glad really we have yet to get a message that's like, I hope y'all are doing terribly.
We are doing well. Thanks for asking. she's pretty close to dropping the Flash at this point. But if she does, she would still tune into our podcast weekly to get the lowdown. Thank Aww. You. We appreciate that. We watch the show. She don't want to. So you don't have to. It says, at the end of the day, no matter how which way you slice it, it didn't make an ounce of sense to isolate Iris from her family investigating. Barry, Nora, and Joe spent almost the entire episode investigating first the hospital and the CCPD with Cecile, and then the birthday party where they found Vicky. I just don't understand why she didn't get the chance to be integrated into that plot when she's the investigative journalist. Mm-hmm. And while they did have her investigate the investigator, Sherlock Wells, they didn't have her figure out that Nora's working with Thawne on her own. So again, what was the point of isolating her if you're not going to pay off what she's doing on her own? Very good question, Mara. And that was done only to service Sherlock exposing Nora in the end, so that they could have the scene with the entire team standing behind Barry and Iris, which is so aggravating to me. Had Iris figured it out, she would have confronted Nora on her own, which with only Barry present, and that would have been amazing. But nah, they gotta have Sherlock do it to shove the whole team in. She says she feels like Iris's feelings about Nora and vice versa are always an afterthought, so I have no doubt next week they're going to have Barry going on a tirade, Iris trying to reason with him, Barry shutting her down and going off on Nora completely, and Nora being mostly concerned about her dad forgiving her rather than her mom. Mm. Godspeed. Even the promise of his appearance is not enough to get me remotely excited. She is like, she is done, y'all. Mara is done. Aww. She has had it. things that she likes, well, she thought Grant, Candace, and Jessica were great in the final scene, so there's that. She really likes Camilla, but she doesn't like how her relationship with Cisco accelerated from 0 to 100, mm-hmm. but that's par for the course of the show. What I did love was Iris interviewing Camilla for The Citizen, Iris building her media empire and hiring her first employees, my baby is doing great things, and I'm here for the blossoming friendship between Iris and Camilla. I didn't get that with Iris and Linda, or Iris and Cynthia, so maybe this time, my time has come. So, that is all from Mara, and again, full content of everybody's feedback will go on our Tumblr, ladiesofbegumption.tumblr.com, so you can look forward to all of that and comment and share your thoughts on there as well. Finally, we are going to get into the body of the show. We are going to review all of the Arrowverse shows that were on this week. Supergirl and Arrow is on side A, Flash, Black Lightning, and Doom Patrol are on side B. Likes, dislikes, Lady of Gumption of the Week. And to kick it off, we have Tatiana. Take it away, Tatiana.
Thank you, dear. Mm-hmm. Side A, a false god / secrets of the trade. Starting with Supergirl, the House of L. Lex Luthor continues to wreak havoc. In the wake of his return, the show flashes back to what he's been doing for the last 2 years and how his secret machinations and plans have affected Supergirl and Lena. I don't know if that's true, but Carl Seton directed the episode written by Dana Horgan and Eric Carrasco. So, what did we feel about the way in which Lex Luthor's plans have affected Supergirl over the last 2 years? Did you like that?
First off... Yeah, first off, I have to say that I just now realized that this I don't get to see episode titles or I don't pay attention to them that much, so it says The House of Ellie. Oh, I see what they did there. I'm a week late, but I see what they did there now.
Yes, obviously, if you missed the episode, the other thing that happened was James got shot, so he was in the hospital waiting to either have surgery or get injected by or Lena's Haronel serum. Or die. Okay. What did we like?
Completely left him out of the summary. That's just...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they couldn't say, like... They could have
because you don't know that he got shot until... Right. Because that was, like, a cliffhanger, so they couldn't put that in there.
Right.
They'd have to be, like, James gets a visit from his sister. But they didn't. Yeah. So, that's fine.
They didn't even put Kelly in there.
Yeah.
Anyways... What did we like about this episode? Yes. Well, this episode was like Lex's big introduction into this Supergirl verse, and I think that they sufficiently achieved bringing him in a way that building that relationship with Lena was believable, and he's scary as a villain. Like the flashback to Lex showing Lena his Operation Red Sun was scary. He was very intimidating. There's an artistic choice about that scene that I don't exactly like, but I'll save that for the dislikes. But overall, I liked just that scene in general. You got a sense immediately of who Lex is and what his modus operandi is. And his grudge with Superman, so all of that was good. And I like how by the end of the episode, we see just the magnitude of Lex's scheming and how long he's been scheming and how long he's been playing this game of chess with not only Lena, but all of, like, Metropolis and National City. So, like, I feel like Lillian must be, like, laughing her ass off somewhere seeing, like, how bad, like, her son played his sister. Because, like, in the, you remember in, like, the beginning, they had the thing with, like, Lena playing chess with her mom, and, you know, she got one over on her. But Lex has been playing chess with everybody for, like, the past, what, 2 years or whatever? Mm-hmm. So, like, all of that's pretty cool. And I was right about Eve, test marker, being the one to shoot James. So, pats on my back. Yay, me. And hats off to her as a character, to be honest, because if Shang hadn't brought her up, if he had just sat there and ate his food and hadn't brought up the comic connection, then I would never have seen her coming. Never, ever. That would have, like blown my mind. She flew completely under the radar for, like, 2.5 seasons. And another thing, we were also correct, that Lex is responsible for the Red Daughter. That's cool that now, finally, after dragging out that the suspense of what's happening, bringing back all of these kind of storylines together, another storyline that they brought back the inferior Grave sibling, which is a surprise that I didn't see coming. I would have preferred Mercy Graves, but I think she was clearly, like, killed on camera, so I guess she was too dead to bring back. We had the inferior Graves sibling, but whatever. But I like that there is a collective, like, legion of evil, or whatever, if you will, to replace the elite now that Manchester is, like, allegedly dead. Mm-hmm. And speaking of Manchester, I don't like how the relationship storyline between him and John ended, but I definitely enjoyed the ride of their story arc overall. I think the staff being brought back, and, like, using Martian lore, how that was incorporated into John's, like, crucible of to kill or not to kill was really well done. It turns out that he chose to kill, but the jury's out on what that actually means. But, like, one of his tests was seeing Kara and Alex as zombies, and the show kind of, and this is after him seeing, like, the vision of his own daughters on Mars. And so I just like how the show continues to show these parallels between John and his Martian daughters and the parallels of that to his human and Kryptonian daughters. So I thought that was really nice. I also like that Kara told John when he told her about what he was going through, and she told him that she understood his pacifism more now than she did in the beginning. So that showed growth, and that standing beside him, beside them was enough. Like, he didn't have to, you know, be actively, I don't want to say violent, but, like, use his power or to kill. Just his support and his being there was enough, which I liked a lot. Which leads over into the hospital plotline, and with all of Team Supergirl standing by James when he needed them, shows kind of how important James is in their life. Everybody shows up, everybody comes, everybody is doing things to support James. Brainy, like, struggling with his failure of not being able to anticipate James getting shot. It just kind of shows, like, how, even though we don't get to see it, they do brunch together, so there's actually some kind of, like, brunch there. Seeing him struggle about that, and I felt kind of bad for him, because how do you anticipate that of which you are unaware? Because no one saw Eve coming. Everyone's focused on Manchester, so it's, you know, it's not technically, Brainy shouldn't be beating himself up that bad about it, but the fact that, you know, he is struggling so much because these people mean so much to him, I felt was really a good scene for him. The intro between Kelly and Alex, of course, was a strange meet cute, because it was not the ideal one. She's meeting Kelly when James is, like, literally dying in the background. But hopefully, now that he's cured, we'll get some more kind of flustered Alex scenes. I thought, you know, when she first sees her and she has this kind of, like, oh my god, kind of, like, look on her face, was great, and so I hope we get actually more of that and just less stressful situations. And then, like, Lena looked, she did look like her boss in that three-piece purple suit, that suit with the bomb. That was, like, one of the best looks I've seen on her, and probably the history of Lena being on the show. I love that suit. That's it. Ended on boss Lena suit.
So we agree she should wear suits more often.
Three-piece suits, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, three-piece suits. I admit that I didn't really know how John Cryer's introduction as Lex would play out, but I'm happy to see that I like him as Lex and his intro a lot. Like, it feels like the most excited the writers have been in a long time when it comes to writing a villain, because they really pulled out all the stops for him, and it's only his first episode. I think he did a good job playing all the different layers of Lex's character and then fucking with Lena, though I really did believe the bit about her mom and how much he liked her more than his own. And then Eve Tessmacher being revealed to be working with Lex and shooting James pretends to be shocked. It was still a good moment because of the way it was done and how it was right around the time Lex was making his exit. And I also didn't see the Graves brother being alive coming at all, so I was surprised to see him. Lex's introduction seems to be tying more deeply into the connections for the season, and I'm finally looking forward to seeing where the season goes, actually. So, like, screw the Children of Liberty, all that. Let's get down to business. And it may not have been much, but I do think Kelly and Alex did have a lot of good bonding time. Like, they both very obviously care for James, and they even had their own mini disagreements and made up all in one episode. And I especially liked that Alex seems frazzled by Kelly, too, and that when Alex asked Kelly to trust her, even when she didn't trust Lena, Kelly made it clear that she did trust Alex. So to me, they already have a pretty solid foundation. Both are big sisters who are very protective of their siblings, and Kelly has an air of power to her like Alex does. So I already ship it. And though it was less explored, I liked that Kara seemed to like run away from the hospital to help Jean on his mission to stop Manchester, but how that turned into her not wanting to sit through the struggle of watching James be injured because she was scared turned out really well. And I like that she ended up discussing it with Alex.
I, too, was mocking the casting choice of John Cryer before this episode. And he still looks like Lena's dad instead of her brother. But his performance was excellent. He was, like, slimy. He was delusional. But he also was, like, seemed like, you know, like he had, like, a really strong, like, steely center. He knew how to turn on the charm when necessary. He knew how to be vulnerable when necessary. So there are a lot of layers at play. And he played them all. I also, like, in retrospect, it was, like, one thing that you can, like, watch twice and get something different out of it. Because first you see the way that people are treating him. Like, Tess is like, oh, I hate having him here. And the guard was, like, being like, oh, police brutality. And then it's, like, because they're playing that up specifically so that it'll turn on Lena's, like, protective instincts.
Aww.
Yeah, and make her more, you know, want to help him more. So I'm like, oh, I see what you did. Yeah, so that was well done. And I also just like the fact that he has this whole elaborate scheme, like to force Lena to test the drug out on James in order to be able to use it himself. Like, just like very super dramatic and like twisty and just like Lex, right? He couldn't have just been like, hey, Lena, I am dying. Can you please, you know? He was like, no, I'm going to do it in the worst possible way. Also, I really liked the story about Lena's mother. Like, I thought it was powerful in the way that it affected her. Like, I don't like the whole, like, oh, bad genes, determinism, you know, that they have going with Lena and with the Luthers in general. But since that is the premise, it was nice for Lena to get that validation that her mom was, like, a good person and that she came from love and whatever, right? You're not tainted! So, but I thought it was really, like, it was a really nice moment for her. And I like that he still insisted that that was true at the end. Like, he's like, oh, I didn't make that up. I just used it against you. So I like that. Yes, the Tess reveal was, like, obvious just because, like, Tessmacher, right? Because of Eve Tessmacher. I keep calling her Tess because I just like that name. But yes, the Eve reveal was obvious because of who she is. Thank you, Shang, for reminding us. But it was satisfying, right? Like, I think it was done well. And then on the opposite end, the Otis reveal was so surprising that it was satisfying. Because I would never have been like, what? You know? Was not expecting that at all. So I was like, oh, okay. I believe you. I also liked Lex letting Lena live because he's like a good brother. He's like, oh, I'm a good brother. Let's not kill my sister. I was like, that's so Lex. Like, he's like, see, I'm a good person, Lena. So, yeah. David Harewood keeps portraying John's inner struggle really well. And I love that, like Jess said, it was like Kara supported him. And, you know, let him know that even his pacifism is a comfort when he's actually there on their side. But also on the flip side, like when he did kill Manchester, she wasn't judging him either. And she wasn't like, oh my God, you gave in to violence. She was like, it doesn't define who you are. You know, you did it the one time. You don't have to do it the second time. It's fine. Also,
she could tell her to the flash.
Yeah, right. Manchester was really asking for it. So I like that she was supportive of him on both ends. And I was happy to see the episode reinforcing that Kara and Alex are like daughters to him. Despite Jang's barely appearing, as you guys already said, like, we saw everyone gathering there for him, so we see his importance, and we also got to see, like, a look into his family life with the introduction of Kelly. I liked her as a character. I really, and I liked how her calm demeanor in the face of what he was facing was, like, underscored both his recklessness, right? Because one of the reasons is she's been there literally a dozen times, so she's like, well, James does this a lot. And since we haven't been there before, like, we haven't seen him do that, so we know that he was even more, like, beyond just guardian, right? He is someone who constantly runs into danger. And then on the other hand, like, you know, she's a military psychologist, so you, like, get to see just, like, how much emotional strength she's had to build up over the course of her career. Also, the fact that she waited until he was out of danger to call their mom and then, like, use that as a threat to James was interesting. So I'm like, I would like to see some more Olsen family dynamics. So I hope we have the opportunity in the future. And then finally, I did enjoy her interaction with Alex. I thought that their first meeting was nice. I liked that they were able to bond over something that is this big, because then that does, even no matter what Brainy says, it does help pave the way if you bond over stressful situations. You do feel more connected afterwards. So, what did we not like about this episode? What would we like to change?
I mean, I'll get to Brie in a minute, but flashing back to what I was saying earlier, it's that theme between Lex and Lena, the artistic choice that I didn't necessarily like, Lena was, like, strapped to a chair with wheels on it, and at first, and, like, Lex is, like, wheeling her around, mm-hmm. and at first it looks like she's in a wheelchair, and I'm sure someone thought this would be, like, a fun, like, comic nod, like, oh, Lena in a wheelchair, mm-hmm. but it just, like, it feels like it does the opposite, and it reminds me that such a defining part of her character backstory in the comics was taken away in the show. It's kind of like, oh yeah, we know she's paralyzed in the comics, we just didn't care. But here's the link nudge where she looks like she's paralyzed. And it's like, that doesn't really make up for the fact that she's not in, like, a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. So yeah, whatever. It's kind of like, I did pick up on that. I was like, well, this is kind of okay. You know, thanks for reminding me that, you know. Then on the Manchester and John storyline, I don't really get what Manchester's point was to antagonize John to the point of killing him. I liked their tension and the story arc as it, you know, progressed over the course of the season, but I feel like the ending was John kills Manchester. Like, I don't see how it works for either of them, because if Manchester wanted John on his side, like, if that was the whole point of, you know, John, be the Manhunter, be the Martian Manhunter, how is it, like, beneficial to Manchester if Manchester dies in the process? Like, how do you know, that doesn't really help him. And then also, I don't like that the story, it doesn't help it doesn't help John either. I don't like how the story culminates in John doing the one thing that he's been struggling not to do and killing Manchester Black. Like, his whole arc is leading towards choosing peace when confronted with hatred and violence. But in killing Manchester, he, like, essentially he fails at his morality story arc. I feel like that's not what a show is supposed to do with his hero. Your hero has, like, a crucible that he has to go through. At the end, you want him to win. So, I feel like there has to be something else with this John Manchester Black storyline, which I'll get to in my predictions. But it felt really odd to me that the end of their story was John killing him. Your hero isn't supposed to feel it doing the right thing. So I feel like there's more to that story. Back over into the Bruni and Nia, and I know Shang felt uncomfortable about the kiss, and I think we had an anon on Tumblr that also felt uncomfortable about the kiss. And while I like Brittany and Nia talking through their guilt of not being able to shave James, it swerved into making it a moment.
It sounded like you said of not, like, being able to shave James.
I heard that too.
Not being able to save James. James is really hairy, and they went to shave him before the surgery, and the doctor said no. They felt really bad about that.
They're guilt at not the most for their friend.
They just want him to look nice.
not being able to save James. But it swerved into making it like a moment where like Brainy is like literally like spiraling right now, and Nia's like, you know, gives like kisses him before electricity goes out. That's supposed to be, ooh, their kiss was so electric it turned off the lights, and like I feel like that's what it's going for. I don't really know what exactly the writers are trying to do with this whole relationship. Like, after two episodes of pretending Brainia didn't exist, after one episode where it definitely should have, was like, now really the time to try and launch a ship? Like, when their friend is dying in the other room, like, yeah, let's launch a ship right now. That sounds like a good thing to do. And then, like, plus not only that, but, you know, the whole devil's advocate side of the situation, if this was reversed and it was Brainy who was the one that was obviously into Nia from the beginning and then chose his time to spontaneously kiss her, would that have been considered, you know, would the writers think that had been considered like a moment? Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me of like when kissing Kara in season one, wasn't she having like a spiral attack and he's like, oh, shut up, let me kiss you. And like that kind of the whole it made Tossie physically sick.
Yes.
But, like, the whole, you know, person A shuts up, person B with a kiss is, like, kind of a problematic trope, just in general. And then in the episode, even what makes it even more kind of a meh is that after that, rather than, you know, you went through all that trouble to get a kiss, and then rather than just push them together, like, you, I don't know if you clearly want to do that or not, because I don't know what their eyes are trying to do, but, like, Brainy pulls, like, Keanu Reeves, Batman, it's not you, it's not me, shh, don't speak, like, speech about how they can't be together. So, it's like the writers are basically driving the Brainy ship with one foot on the gas and the other foot on the brake at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating, and I don't get it. I don't get, like, you had a whole ass Valentine's Day episode in which to launch ship, and you didn't. So, why are you still doing this whole kind of back and forth? Just pull the trigger, or stop wasting everybody's time. Honestly. The end.
Thank you for pointing out that Lena was strapped to a chair that had wheels, because I didn't realize the chair had wheels. Mm-hmm. I was live tweeting. I wasn't really paying attention. So yeah, I can see how that's like super problematic, given that she was a character in a wheelchair in the comics, and then they decided to make her able-bodied. That's not the type of Easter egg we want. And moving into Brainy and Nia, I think they've become, like, the most annoying will-they-won't-they situation. The writers clearly don't know what the hell they want to do with the ship at this point, so I wish they just, like, let it die, because this episode's development was really cringeworthy. In a heated moment for Nia, anyway, she decides to kiss Brainy, and for, like, that one moment, I thought the writers had finally decided to move forward with the ship. But really, Nia's been doing the most of the work in this situation, and then when I finally thought Brainy would reciprocate, he comes to the conclusion that they shouldn't be in a relationship because Keanu Reeves said so. And then Nia doesn't react either, and then Brainy walks away, so I think they tried to play it for amusement, and it just came off wrong and exhausting instead.
Yeah, like, why do that? That just...
Exactly.
It wastes everybody's time. It makes Nia look, you know... I don't know. Just it doesn't do favors for Nia, and that she's chasing someone that is not responding right, or reciprocating.
Exactly. Like, because she's doing all the work, she looks more interested in Brainy. And even after the development of him wondering why she'd want to go out with him, he still doesn't put any effort and comes off as someone who's going with the motions rather than someone who's equally as interested in her the way she seems to be in him. But even with the way that it ended, and the excuse used, Nia didn't really look disappointed either, so I'm left wondering where this is going and if it's even going anywhere.
I feel like that was, like, the thing. Like, she's like, okay, Wildcat. Like, she was still gonna, like, pursue it or something like that.
Yes. I took whatever you say, Wildcat, to mean, like, she didn't believe him. And I think that that's how you're, like, supposed to take it, because she smiled, too. Like, she wasn't... Because, I mean, like, who's gonna take him seriously when he's like, no, don't speak. Keanu Reeves said we can't be together. Like, oh, damn. Keanu Reeves said we can't be together. So I don't think we're supposed to take it as Brainy is definitely not interested in just using weird excuses to shut her down. I think we're supposed to take it as, like, Brainy is a weirdo who uses these excuses because he's afraid of his feelings or whatever. But
I feel like I think it was like an anon, or I read somewhere. It's either someone tweeted it, or that was an anon that we got, was saying that he, you know, if it's like a future thing, like I don't want to mess with the timeline or whatever, then
you know, we should hear that. Like, even if he's not telling me that, somebody
exactly
telling somebody that.
That's true, because we still don't
like really an excuse here, because in this case he's been in the past for a long time, so right. I feel like messing with the future is already happening.
Right. Well, no, yeah, exactly. But that, I guess that could be part of why he didn't want to tell Nia.
Future, like,
exactly.
Nura.
He didn't want to tell Nia about Nura, and we had that weird plot line where it was not really explained why he didn't, other than just messing with the timeline, which, like you said, he's already doing. But whatever.
Yeah, but I just, like, comes off as, like, ship bait moments rather than actually developing an actual relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's, like, making me not want to ship it anymore because I stopped caring. Mm-hmm. And then I also didn't like that Jean immediately blamed Manchester for shooting James, when that doesn't make any sense. Like, he was blinded by his rage for him and his need to take him down that he went in without thinking. Mm-hmm. Ben Lockwood and the rest of the Children of Liberty would have more of a vendetta against James than Manchester had. And the fact that no one thought it was a good idea to think about any of the other options before diving headfirst threw off some of the enjoyment of the episode. Plus, like, the episode took his rage and used it against him because he was supposed to have stepped back, stop to think about what he was doing and come up with a better solution, but instead he killed Manchester, which even goes against the whole Manchester wants to get rid of Ben Lockwood because now he can't. And then it only proved that Jean let his anger and more violent tendencies win. So I'm also a little annoyed that they actually killed Manchester so quickly when he ended up having nothing to do with any of the events surrounding James's shooting. And then finally, even though we all predicted Eve would be working with Lex and be the bad guy, thanks, Chang, I do think the show should have had her be around just a bit more over the course of the last two seasons, because most of the time we just kind of forgot she was there. So the reveal it packed a punch, but it didn't pack as much of a punch as it could have, considering how long she's actually been around. And this is more of a nitpick, but I can't stand that the show really expects us to believe that Lex is only 8 or so years older than Lena, because John Cryer could practically be her dad, so let's try to be serious, writers.
Yes. I very much agree about John Cryer's age. It's not believable. It's just not realistic, but that's fine. Aside from that, I also agree, like, Lena being strapped to the chair at the beginning was not a good look, for the reasons Jessica already stated. I didn't see it the first time, because I was 20 minutes late to the episode, so I obviously didn't see it until I rewatched the episode. but it's not, like, why would you make a purposeful nod to her being paralyzed when you're ignoring it on the show? Like, unless they're, like, if it was, like, a hint towards, like, her destiny, like, oh, Lena ends up paralyzed, which is not the case. She was already, you know? But yeah. If it was a hint to her destiny, it'd be one thing, but even then, it's, like, no one wants a Felicity or Barbara situation. So you didn't cast...
Or even then, mm-hmm. Like, she just created a cure to
right. fix all so it would be, that, like, a Felicity situation. She'd just stab herself yeah. with it and then walk away out of James's life. So yeah, like, no one wants that. They should have cast a disabled actress in the first place, and the fact that they didn't, you know, just don't remind us that you didn't do that. Okay, thank you. I really didn't like Manchester going out like that. Like, I was like, even if he's not dead, like, it was just like, I felt like a waste of a plot. Like I liked John's progress through it and his, like, the way that he played it, but for Manchester to take the risk of really dying on the off chance that it would make John, like, honestly, just prove John wrong. Because there's no way that, like, killing Manchester would then make John, like, a killing machine that's going to go out and take revenge on all racists or whatever it is that Manchester wants him to do, you know? Like, there's no scenario where that happens for John. So at most, it would be like, ugh, Manchester was right. And then he'd just, like, go cry in a corner for, like, a year. So I don't know what he wanted. And it just was dumb. And it also makes it look like, I talked about this before with you guys, like, he doesn't really care. Like, John was right the whole time. Manchester was just looking for an excuse because of Fiona's death to take out his anger, looking for a way to die, looking for a way to whatever, you know? So I'm like, why did we just spend so long on that if that's all that Manchester wanted? I don't know. Just go ask someone else to kill you. And then, like you said, May, like, why were they blaming Manchester why was John blaming Manchester for the James thing? Like, unless it was, like, a weird roundabout, like, Manchester caused a disturbance at the rally, which made James take the photo, which then made someone shoot James. Like, okay, maybe, but even then, like, that's not really something that's relevant. So, and the fact that Kara went with him, like, instead of, like, asking him to stay and wait, like, Manchester says with John, so he's not going anywhere, you know? Like, if you had just waited to see if James is okay before going after Manchester, then Manchester would still be around because he's waiting for you to pay attention to him. So I didn't like that Kara was off helping John while James was dying. When, as Alex said, like, oh, you're his best friend. And I was like, doesn't look like you're his best friend. Like, why is Alex the one that's here in this plot line being like, we have to use the cure. James is going to die. And I was like, are you even like, do you know James? I don't know.
Kara had a lot of best friends she's been neglecting.
Yes.
And they're all Alex's best friends. They're all Alex's best friend. James is Alex's best friend.
Yeah. Kara makes the friends so that Alex can keep them, I guess. And then even like the Brainy thing, like Brainy was really worried and I loved that for like as character development for Brainy, but like we've never seen one of their brunches. So again, I'm like, all the people that like never interact with James are the ones that are here like, please James, make it through. So I was like, this is a little bit weird. It's a little bit fake. I mean, I think that's also how you knew that nothing was going to happen to James, because if something was going to happen to James, then the people that actually cared about James would be there.
Be living in the hospital.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway. So, whatever. So, I shared Alex's frustration, basically, about, like, why Kara wasn't around and the fact that Kara couldn't even come up with a good explanation. Because there wasn't a good explanation, because the mattress thing was a wild goose chase. Why were you doing that? So, yeah. Anyway. Speaking of best friends and their crises. Like I said, Brainy's crisis was relatable. I really liked that as character development for him, but I really did not like it as a launching pad and a roadblock simultaneously rolled in one, like... 2-in-1 body and shampoo. Okay. for Brainy and Nia. Like, Nia kissing him to calm him down was, like, super random. It was super abrupt. I don't know if you guys, like, whatever, remind me of that, like, Lydia and Styles kiss from, like, Teen Wolf, except that at that point, Styles had been, like, obsessed with Lydia for 5 years, so you're like, this makes sense. But here, it did not make any sense. And then it just... like, they just shut it down. Like, they turned off the light so you couldn't even see Brainy processing his feelings. Doesn't matter. So now, like you guys have said, Nia seems desperate. Her affections look one-sided. The Keanu Reeves quote, was it from Speed? I think it was from Speed. Was, like, a super random moment to have, like, a classic movies with Brainy scene. Like I already said, I think that it suggested at the end that she doesn't believe him, and we're not supposed to either. But I don't, in that case, they shouldn't have done that plot at all. Just let Brainy freak out and let Nia calm him down. And then let us be like, see, she's the one that's there for him. I guess I ship it. Not, see, she's the one that kisses him randomly. And then he's the one that just leaves again. I ship it. Because no one is saying that.
Like, if they didn't have that ending conversation, it just would have been like a tease. Like,
yeah.
Maybe they'll talk about their feelings later. But then it's like, nope, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, like, if you were gonna do that kiss to shut up moment, you should have just been, like, the kiss, and then be like, what was that for? Be like, oh, I just wanted to calm you down, and be like...
And, like, a longer kiss. Like, they barely touched lips, and then the lights turned off, and it's like, oh, well, that's over.
Yeah, yeah. So, whatever.
That's over. That's canceled.
It's just not well done. Not well done. So, moving on to predictions. I know that Jessica has one. Please share.
Manchester has 9 lives, and he's on life number 7. I don't think he's dead, because like I said, like, I don't think that that's a good way to end John's, like, story progression, mm-hmm. to have him fail at the one thing that he was trying not to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to make it right somehow. So I feel like Manchester is somehow not dead. James will start exhibiting some unusual powers and side effects from Lena's drug, which will also lead to fear that Lex, who also took the drug, might get superpowers. So I agree with Shang that there's going to be some kind of side effects that are still unforeseen from Lena's drug, because she was forced to use it before she felt ready to. And then I think there will be inevitably be some scenes of Kara's friends interacting with Red Daughter, thinking that it's Kara, until Red Daughter, like, injures them or something like that.
Yeah, I definitely agree that James is going to exhibit side effects from the drug, and that's how we're going to see what that drug can do, because originally it was meant to be to give human superpowers, so, or maybe not originally, it was meant to cure cancer, and then for a while it was going to give human superpowers, and now it will just save your
life. Lena's like mood board of whatever board, what this drug was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Little Pinterest of what this drug
was supposed to do. It's very unclear. I agree with that, and I definitely also agree with the Red Daughter thing. I don't know what I think about the Magister. I'm sure he's not done, but I'm like, I just don't know what the point was. So we'll find out.
And I think it would be really fucked up to, if they really wanted to give Lena angst, they would just use the cure to kill James because of the side effects and then just like have her create something else. But I hope that's not what's going to happen because I don't want it to happen and it would look really awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, no more killing James. Thank you.
I don't think if he dies because of the cure, that means Lex also died because of the cure, which I don't think they want to kill Lex.
Right, right. So. Yeah, so I think I like the idea of it, like, James is getting some superpowers, and she's like, what's going to happen when Lex gets them? And there's been plenty of arcs where Lex gets superpowers, so that would be like...
Oh, but Guardian Corps could get back together now if she explains what's happening, but that's I think true. He's going to be really pissed.
We'll see.
But he's also going to be like, but you saved my life.
So exactly. Okay. He was grateful that she saved his life, so we'll see. We'll see.
Which is more than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be like, how could dare you use this cure on me or whatever.
How dare you use this cure to save my life?
We underestimated you, James. All right, moving on to Arrow. Star City 2040. Flash forward to the future. Redundant. Mia and William venture into the Glades on a dangerous mission. They run into Dinah, Roy, and Zoe, who deliver some devastating news. The flash forwards share highlights from Mia's childhood with Felicity. James Bamford directed the episode, written by Beth Schwartz and Oscar Valderrama. What did we like?
Knowing James Bamford directed this episode, I have some thoughts that I will get into later with Mia. First, what did I like? I really liked the timeline progression sequence of Mia growing up and being, like, trained by Nyssa, not only because it meant seeing Katrina Law again, but also because it was a nice time progression that explained why Mia is as an experienced fighter as she is, when clearly Oliver was never in her life. William and Mia trying to figure out how to be siblings continues to entertain me. I like their dynamic, with Mia being, like, a tough, streetwise kid, and William being, like, the work smarter, not harder older brother. They've lived, like, completely different lives, and trying to see them, you know, how to interact with each other is also always really, like, entertaining. I like characters that are, like, looks like they can kill you on the outside, but are actually a cinnamon roll on the inside. So, and that seems to be Mia. I think I just, like, cut McNamara as Mia. Visually, I think she's a really cool character. I think Kat plays her well. Like, the little, like, when she gets out of the elevator and she's like, hi. Like, that little hi thing that she did. I thought it was, like, you know... It was like a moment kind of thing. Like, she's very cool. She's very flashy. And while it's also like a semi-dislike in the sense that I think the writers lean into that, they like her aesthetics more than they like her as a fleshed out personality. Sometimes it works, you know. She had some like good, like kind of cool moments. So yeah, it's fun. Watching her take out like a room full of bad guys is fun. I also like the potential of the relationships that she has with Connor. I want to know more about them, how they met, how long they've been together. Because she was pretty pissed off when she found out that he was like lying to her, that their whole relationship could have been a lie. She's like, what was real? Was it real between you and I? I'm like, I want to know what that was so I can decide for myself whose side I should be on in this relationship. Am I team Connor or team Mia? I don't know yet. But I like the premise of the two of them. And I see now, like, at the last week, I was like, I don't understand why Oliver didn't adopt Connor. But now I see now the real reason why he didn't do it was so Connor and me could have sex without feeling worried about it. Diggle had to adopt Connor so he could have sex with me in the future. Not Diggle, but Connor. Anyway.
Oh, God. That's a horrible image.
Yeah, not Diggle. No. I like that Connor and Zoe both had larger parts to play in this episode, because I was afraid that the whole Mia William thing would overshadow both Connor and Zoe individually, as well as Connor and Mia and William and Zoe. So I like that both of them came back into the episode. I also liked, I guess, the the scene, the final scene after they had saved Felicity, and she goes to Mia in her apartment, and they're talking it out, and like Mia's like crying and all that kind of stuff. While I have other issues with stuff, but I feel like that was emotionally well played between the two of them, mm-hmm. and it was a nice kind of like resolution for them coming back together kind of moment. And then the whole overall part of like Archer program and the part that it plays in the future, and the fact that Felicity and the ending scene finally gets it up and running, and that's like the beginning of the end, I thought was really good.
I really loved the reveal at the end, because it did create like this interesting dynamic that supposed heroes like Felicity can make huge mistakes, and something she thought she created to help was taken and used to harm, kind of like how, you know, Big Brother type activities and paranoia and all of these things are supposedly there to protect us, but also cause harm in our real lives as well. I also like the fact that the episode reiterated that heroes aren't the only ones wearing suits and those who have powers, but that Felicity can be considered a hero as well. So I like that. That's like been a constant theme throughout all the shows. And I liked seeing the flash forwards to me as a flash forwards to Mia's childhood, and was especially happy to realize that it was Anissa who trained her, because she was like a sight for sore eyes.
Anissa?
You're right, Nissa. She was a sight for sore eyes. It was great to see Katrina Law, and it explained why Mia knows how to fight so well. And then since I've come to find the future storyline to be more intriguing than the present one, I like that it was all set in the future and that we finally got to see future Felicity with all of her blonde hair glory and only some wrinkles, and that the tension between Renee and Zoe finally came to a point of resolution. I like that Renee apologized and that the whole gang was back and working together again. I found myself really intrigued by the development of Connor and Mia having a romantic relationship and want to see where it goes, and liked Felicity apologizing and reconciling with both William and Mia. Especially like that moment between her and William, and like how when they're side by side, you knew exactly that they, you know, he was influenced by Felicity. And then that moment with Mia at the end, like you mentioned, Jess. Plus, as always, the fight scene coordination was really good. So thank you, James Vanford. I've come to like Mia as a character, and I think Catherine McNamara has done a good job balancing her tough outer shell with her inner vulnerabilities and feelings, because she was like going through a lot this episode. And then the relationship she has with William is on point in terms of sibling bickering and banter, and their interactions are something I've come to look forward to just as much as Renee and Dinah's, actually. And then like all in all, I just think this episode really progressed the story and gave us new and fresh layers to the characters, and was done well enough that I didn't even notice Oliver's absence. And I actually had a friend text me and was like, this did really feel like a backdoor pilot. So he agrees with Tasha.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say I did notice Oliver's absence, but only because I was like, oh, this is how the show could go on without him. So yeah.
He's dying at the end of the season, y'all.
So yeah.
He's dying, and they're going to use a past version of him in the crossover.
Hey, you know, they could do that. Because that would be weird. I guess it would be like... like Captain Cold all over again. But yeah. I didn't want to go back to the present after this episode. I was like, why can't we just stay in 2040? I don't need 2019 on Arrow anymore. I did really like seeing all the different dynamics unfold, especially William and Mia getting to know each other, figuring out how they work together as siblings and as like a team. And I also like, I especially love the moment where like William's pretending to be a CEO, and I was like, oh, William's actually doing a pretty good job right now, when he was like being the CEO of his little company. And Mia was like refusing to be the assistant. She's like, I'm his partner. I'm his associate. I like that. And then of course, Connor's dramatic rescue of them at just the right moment. I was like, what's William gonna do to get out of this? And instead, it was Connor, and I love that. Like Jessica, I would be very interested in some Mia Connor backstory, so I knew whose side to be on. although, you know, we'll talk about this in the dislikes, but let's just say I was on Connor's side, just to, like, on principle. I also like that, like, the new team got through to Renee, thank God, because I was like, this doesn't make sense. And then they're like, hey, Felicity's alive. He's like, oh, thank God. Now I'm going to be on your side again. But thank God that was, like, blown over. Now they're all friends again. He can use his, like, being their public enemy, you know, like, being publicly against them to their advantage. Great. Glad that he and Zoe made up. glad that he and Dinah were not irreparably damaged, and I'm glad that he's still alive, because I definitely thought, there was a while I was like, he is going to get dead at the end of this episode. He's going to get killed for switching sides. Didn't happen. Whew. I love the William and Felicity reunion. I liked that, you know, he did not harbor the resentment. He gave all his resentment to Mia. And also, it was nice to see Felicity and Dinah together, and Dinah, like, actually being happy that Felicity was alive. Because it was also that moment, like, where I think you got to see her be, I don't know if vulnerable is the right word, but before that, she was just kind of like, Felicity's dead, moving on. And then here, when Felicity's alive, she's like, oh, thank God, I was really sad. You know? I would have maybe been like, I guess Dinah's just hardened now. But she has to be, because the world is shit. I also like the reveal at the end, like, informing the situation, part of the situation that they're in now is, like, because of, and it makes it clear why Felicity feels a large measure of responsibility because for the world going to shit, because of the whole Emerald Archer tech program thing. So I look forward to seeing how that deteriorates and how that makes her the slightly less paranoid than I thought she was based on the way they talked about her up to this point. But how it makes her, like, cabin in the woods with Mia. I'll talk about the Felicity and Mia flashbacks later on, but I did love seeing Nyssa again. I love that we got a better context for the life that they lived, you know, and what was happening prior to Mia's goth phase. So, what did we not like?
This child is so emo. I feel like we should put a poll on, like, Twitter to see who is the most dramatic extra superhero offspring. Is it Mia or is it Nora? Because both of them are just, like, ridiculously extra and overdramatic. And I feel like a lot of the drama this week just seems like Mia was being extra. And like I said before, like, I feel like the writers like Mia's aesthetics more than they are committed to fleshing out Mia's, like, backstory. Mm. I feel like I know what they were trying to go for with the angst between Mia and Felicity with the whole, like, you lied to me my whole life. But, like, I swear, like, when we first met Blackstar, I thought Mia was, like, abandoned at, like, 7 and was living on a street, like a street rat, like Aladdin. And she didn't know, like, where her mom was or, like, was having to, like, make ends meet on her own. But, like, instead, we see in this episode, she's had, like, a seemingly quiet and happy, albeit secluded. Like, they are secluded in the woods. But, you know, she's talking to Miss Carver, who wants to set her up with her son. Like, she had, like, a pretty normal life with her mom up until maybe about, like, a year ago, when she learns, like, Felicity does some occasional hacking in her spare time, and that's enough for me to have, like, a full-on goth phase and tattoo a black star. And be like, the world, like, this black star is all that I have left because there's nothing in there. You know, like, just super emo about it. And, like, getting into prize fighting, like, immediately after running away from home. I don't know. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot, Mia. Like, her aggressive punch first, ask questions later personality doesn't exactly fit the back style that we saw in that timeline progression. Like, it's not like, yes, she was trained by Nyssa to how to fight, but it's not like Felicity hyper-trained her to be a vigilante. Like, she's not, you know, like in the comics, Arrowette, Bonnie trained Sissy. So, like, you have to be the best, you have to do this so you can, you know, join fight with the arrow, whatever. It's not that kind of situation where Felicity's like, you have to be your dad kind of thing. It's not like Emiko's situation, where Emiko also, like, her life was upturned, like, a year ago, but she's also been having to, like, work for Dante to survive. So it's not like, you know, that's the same thing that's happening to Mia. And it's also not like, you know, she and Felicity were constantly on the run from someone or something. They're not running everywhere. There's no reason for Mia to be as, like, paranoid and as, like, to this extent of just being aggressive, I'm just going to punch you now and then figure it out later. Like, it doesn't really make sense to me how she's that extreme from the life that she's lived. Like, Felicity doesn't seem, in the flashbacks, you know, super paranoid or whatever to make Mia also feel that way. So it's kind of like a disconnect. The fight seems, it's like, the fight with Felicity seemed a little stupid. Mia runs away, but she leaves a note just like, you know, you can't stop me, mom, but just in case you wanted to, here's a note where I tell you where I'm going and what I'm going to do. So, you know, yeah, it's just like, do you want to run away or do you not want to run away? Like,
it's like mother and daughter. Because Felicity leaves him a note. Don't come after me. But in case you want to, I will be here.
But in case you want to, I will be here at 7 p.m. I'll be wearing a jacket. Anyway, I also thought, like, her like, quote-unquote fight with Connor was a little melodramatic. Because, like, we don't even know up until this point what their relationship had been. Like, if we had maybe consistently seen a little bit more of them, a little bit more of Connor, a little bit more of their dynamic, and what they mean to each other, then maybe his quote-unquote betrayal would have stung a little bit more. Maybe it would have been, like, more on, like, Mia's side, like, oh, yeah, I get it. Like, y'all were supposed to be, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend, whatever, and then suddenly this happens. Like, I could see that, but, like, I don't even know, like, we have barely seen Connor since he's been introduced, so how did they meet? When did they meet? How can I, you know, how can I be on Mia's side? Like, did he, like, come up to her? Did he, you know, was he in the Night's Watch, and that was his mission to go and seduce Oliver's daughter? Like, I don't know. So it's kind of, like, difficult to be on Mia's side when he's basically coming in as a knight to save them, and she's mad about it. Yeah, so, like, these would have been nice hints to know what the fuck their relationship was like, so I could feel affected by it afterwards. And then also, my issue with James Vanford coming out of the elevator into that fight sequence, Mia does this kind of, like, slow-mo model walk up to the bad guy. She's, like, slinking up to him, and Kat looks very great. She looks cool, but I thought it was kind of cheesy. I feel like they wouldn't have, like, James wouldn't have done this to Steven if this was a guy. They wouldn't be this, like, slow-mo model sultry walk up to a guy before you take him out. Oliver never had to do this. He never, like, cat slinked up to a villain in slow motion before taking him out. So why are you doing this with Mia? Other than that she's a girl and you want to be kind of sexy and kind of cool, you know? Again, like, I think the writers are more focused on, you know, flashy, she looks sexy, she looks hot, mm-hmm. instead of, like, functionality, or, and it kind of shows in those moments. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Renee, like, I know, like, I love Renee. I know y'all love Renee, and y'all are probably, like, a little bit easier on Renee than I was on Renee. I was like, I'm like Tasha on Renee for this episode. Like, he was serious about blowing up Star City. Like, before, I just thought he was just, like, you know, playing. I don't know what I thought, but, like, I'm hard-pressed to believe that he was that gullible, to believe that blowing up chunks of a city was, like, the logical thing to do, and I feel like he had to be written extremely out of character for the benefit of drama, mm-hmm. to get this, like, Renee-Zoe Ang storyline to work. And also, like, what's the point of blowing up Star City with people in it? Like, why are we doing that? It just seemed kind of, like, stereotypical, like, evil TV villain, because that's what evil TV villains are supposed to do. Like, I don't know what Kevin Dale's motivation is for being okay with genocide. Like, did they hurt his dog? I don't know. They called him ugly in middle school. I don't know. Like, what is his purpose? Like, what hurt would it do to evacuate people before you blow up a city?
And it came out like the plot for Batman. It came out like the plot begins. It's like, oh, you know, Ra's al Ghul's like, I want to blow up Gotham because I want to start fresh.
Right. So that's what, with, like, all the people, all the people have to go. Like, what is the villain manifesto?
Sodom and Gomorrah. He's like, y'all have sinned. It's time to go.
Like, half the people must be, let me Thanos this situation right quick. All the people in the Glades get to live and everybody else dies. We start over. Like, I don't understand. That's all. That's all my dislikes.
All right.
Just that?
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that Mia, who, despite knowing how to fight people, would suddenly feel okay going out into the world and dealing with the black market and fighting rings.
Right.
Like, she was really sheltered growing up, and someone who's lived that kind of sheltered life with seemingly no friends and only her mom would be comfortable being in a grittier, more gruesome world than where and how she was raised. So there was no real learning curve for this new life either. She just entered it and felt right at home, which is odd, considering that they have William playing the I don't belong role in this episode more than her. And I guess I just expected her to be a bit more anxious or nervous, show a couple of scenes with her messing up, faltering, talking to the wrong people, so she didn't just, like, walk out into the streets and have this heightened sense of confidence about what she was doing.
Yeah, I mean, even, like, Oliver had, like, a sheltered life, but at least he did have 5 years on Lianyu and with the Bratva and all that kind of stuff, where he had to do all of that and he had to learn all that. So even his, like, progression into how he is who he is now makes sense. Mia's does not make sense.
Yeah, I was just like, I just got a tattoo that makes me, like, not sheltered anymore, I guess. Moving on. I agree that Mia was being dramatic. Like, her mom hides a few things from her, and suddenly she's calling her Felicity instead of mom and talking about, if anyone's going to kill Felicity, it'll be me. I get why she's angry, but it was, like, too much to believe that she harbored that much hate for her mother, who was presumably dead or in danger, because she didn't even know the extent to what of what Felicity was or wasn't doing, because she walked out before she could find answers and then relied on assumptions or information from others after she left. And then in general, I think all of the, oh, by the way, Oliver and I had a daughter, reactions fell flat, and I know that they were running out of time, but no one even questioned Felicity and Oliver hiding Mia from them, which still makes me wonder how soon in the present Oliver and Felicity will go into hiding. And then the idea, like you said, Jess, that Renee knew about the plan to blow up Star City, but was okay with it until he found out no one would actually be evacuated, was, like, frustrating, because it goes against everything Renee had stood for before, and it was really only so that they could have someone from the team on the other side of the situation and working from inside the Glade, so it could be like, oh, I can't believe he's doing that, but it didn't make any sense. And then finally Roy, like, he barely has a story so far, and I forget when he's not around, and then he pops back up, and what exactly is the purpose of bringing him back if they aren't going to give Roy anything substantial besides an easy paycheck for Colton? So I just want to know why he's there.
That is a good point about Roy. I literally forgot he was there, so it would be great to know why. All I want to know is what happened to Thea, and no one's going to tell me, so whatever. Mia's dramatics were, like, unnecessary isn't even the right word, because the problem with them is that, like, her dramatics were necessary to move the plot forward, but they seemed, like, so extreme and so fake. Like, basically anything is a betrayal for Mia. Like, if she was, like, if you brought a glass of water to her and it didn't have ice in it, she'd be like, I cannot believe that you thought I wanted a glass of water with no ice. You disgust me. Because it's like literally, Felicity is hacking, and we still don't even understand anything. We're like, oh, so you've been hacking, and you haven't let me hack? You wouldn't let me go to beyond the supermarket, but you hack? And then she, like, runs off like she's Archie Andrews to go join a fight club. So that's, like, the level of intelligence that I am seeing from her at this moment. And then, of course, you know, how angry she got at Connor for hiding his, like, not Argus connection. To the point that she's like, I guess everything was a lie, because you didn't tell me that you do this thing that you know that I don't like, therefore everything is a lie. I was like, that's not how that works.
Did she even know that Diggle was Connor's adopted dad? Was that confirmed or not?
No, I think that she wasn't surprised. It turned out she was not surprised when he told the others. Well, because she wasn't mad at him until she found out about the Argus, Nightwatch, thank you. So I think she was not surprised about the Diggle part.
I mean, like, a little bit, you know, connecting point A to point B, right. That is Diggle.
And she just seems super inconsistent, because it's like, from her mom, she heard her dad was a hero, and that the vigilantes are being lied on, right? Like, everyone's lying about vigilantes, they're actually cool people, don't worry about it. And then she finds out her mom is still kind of vigilanting, but not really. And she's like, I guess vigilantes are monsters. And everyone else was right. And I was like, wait, what? That was a huge leap. So then she, like, totally flips on her opinion on vigilantes after that, because her mom lied. And then she sees her mom again, and they have, like, one conversation. And she's like, well, I guess I'm back on board. Vigilantes are great. And everything that I was thinking before was a lie, which was already a lie from everything I was thinking before. So I was like, okay, you have lots of problems. You have to work these out. So and in general, I would say that, like, that whiplash feeling happened with a lot of the storylines. Like, because I really liked this episode, and I liked how it pushed the plot forward, like you guys said, and how we got to see the relationships. But because they were trying so hard to save all of the reveals for this episode, you then had to have, like, people flipping back and forth. Like, Renee, who was a huge dumbass if he thought that they really would be able to evacuate everyone. And then suddenly he's like, what? Felicity's alive? Wait a second. Turns out they're not evacuating everyone. This plan has been terrible. I'm flipping back to the other side. And I was like, what? And everyone was like, thank God, Renee. We're so happy. Which I liked, because I didn't want to have this stretched out angst. But if you had already established that, like Renee realizing that episode where he found out that the dude killed Felicity or whatever, that should have been his turning point to, like, try to come back. Right. And then we could have had a little bit more drawn out angst, or, you know, a little bit of, like, a realistic return to status quo, I guess. It just seems super, like, super fast. Like, it's like, you know, after school special of, like, we can all get along as long as we just understand each other's perspectives. So, that was silly. And then the, what other thing am I saying? I think that's pretty much it. The other thing that I would say is, like, the backstory that Blackstar gave on Felicity also seems super inconsistent with what we saw. So, like, so maybe, like, I'm sure that Mia was just lying, but she had said stuff about Felicity and the bombing. I don't remember what it was, but she made it sound like they were working together on something, and then they stopped working together on something.
Oh, yeah.
And there was, like, what was the reason for saying that? That's clearly a lie. And, like, you didn't need to make that lie. You could have just been like, oh, yeah, I used to know Felicity, and now I don't. Done. Like, no one's like, oh. It's like, it made it sound like she thought that Felicity was bombing the city early on. And then she was like, oh, and then Felicity decided not to bomb the city. Like, what? I don't know. It was very
And things like when she said that, how, oh, yeah, this is on brand for her, like, trying to do these things. I'm like, how would you even know that?
You didn't even know your mom until, like, a year ago. When she told you that she was a vigilante. Well, you found out she was a vigilante. So how do you know it's on brand for her or not?
Right.
I'm guessing that was another, like, you know, it's supposed to be, like, a misdirect of Mia's not related to Felicity until we want you to know that she's actually is related to Felicity, but... Yeah, it does seem like a little bit inconsistent when you look back on it after the fact.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what? Anyway.
Because she wasn't even, it's not like Mia was like, you know, counter-spying on them to figure out what they knew.
Right.
And like, she's using it as like a lead-in to get into to them. So it's not even, you know, you can't even say that she did it on purpose. She's just lying for the sake of lying.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's extra.
She's extra. That is exactly correct. All right. So what do we predict based on this episode?
There was someone on Twitter who predicted Laurel will be going back to E2 at the end of the season. And after this episode, I definitely 100% agree with them, especially knowing she wasn't present in Mia's life when she was growing up. Like, I hoped she would be. So that means she's not Felicity's friend in the future because she's not around. So
that's true. Yeah, because I feel like if she would definitely have been the one helping to train Mia instead of Nyssa if she was around. I'm not sure if I agree that she's going back to Earth 2 because she seems pretty, like, setting down roots in Earth 1. Unless something, like, really dramatic happened over in Earth 2, I don't see a reason for her going back. So the other, but the other alternative is that she's dead.
So. Yeah, I don't like that.
Like, my prediction would be something happens to Laurel because that's why she's not around, but I don't want anything to happen to Laurel. So let's just say she becomes the president. That's why she's not in Star City. She's in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
That's my prediction. Okay.
Like, another thing that they, I guess, with this Arrow storyline is that you know that Renee and Dinah and Roy all survive.
Right.
Next year's crossover.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
All the characters that we saw in the future are going to survive. So, really, the only ones we didn't see were Laurel and Oliver, right? And I guess Emiko.
And Diggle.
And Diggle.
Oh, right. Duh, Diggle's dead. Maybe not in the crisis. Maybe not in crisis, but his ass is dead at some point before now.
Yeah.
So. All right. Blaze Gumption nominees.
Yes. I guess we have to say Mia.
Do we?
We don't have to, I guess. Or else Felicity for doing the whole, for like going in there and trying to stop things.
Yeah.
Lena Luthor.
Yes, Lena Luthor on Supergirl. That's an easy one.
And Eve. I want to put Eve up there.
All right, she did have some gumption. She did have some gumption.
Trail.
Yeah.
She had a hell of a lot of gumption pretending to be Lena's friend for 2 years.
Right.
And James' friend, and then shooting him in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, stabbing people in the back.
Literally. A more clear cut of Supergirl noms than the Arrow, I think. Although, I mean, like, I feel like, you know, this was, like, if we were to do, like, by the book, whatever, paint by numbers, Lady with Gumption nomination, then it should be Mia for Arrow, but just, like, as a paint by numbers.
Yes.
And not because, you know.
Like, the heart's not in it.
I mean, she had the gumption to run away from home, I guess.
Yeah, she had the gumption to become a prize fighter.
Heart knock life.
Yes. She had the gumption to, curse everyone's name and then forgive them in the same episode. But yeah. Anyway, so
I don't feel good about that one, but it is a paint by numbers situation. Okay.
But so we're really like it's probably Lena and Eve for side A that we'll decide between later on.
Yes.
Now on to side B. Secrets are like walls, / powers that be, / hot diggity. And we commence with the Flash. Recap. Time bomb. Nora decides to tell Barry and Iris the truth about Vaughn. Team Flash finds out that a suburban mom named Vicky Bolin is in danger, and they race to save her. Upon meeting her, they discover she's a metahuman who is hiding her abilities from her family. Barry encourages Vicky to share her secret with her family, which makes Nora realize she needs to come clean with her parents about Vaughn. Rob Greenlee directed the episode, written by Kristen Kim and Sterling Gates. Well, good to know. Good to know that Kristen Kim wrote that episode. It wasn't terrible. So we're moving on up, Kristen.
Did we switch out Kristen Kim and get a new one? Yeah. Take this one back. I was like, this one is effective. Give me a new Kristen Kim.
Yeah.
So what did we like about the episode, ladies?
Overall, it was a pretty good episode. Like, with Grace now as Cicada, it proves how much more interesting and formidable she is as a villain in comparison with, like, Orland's version. Mm-hmm. And I like that she got right down to business and tried to find the metahuman she thought had killed her parents. And you can really sense the hatred she has for metahumans. And even though it was explained to her that what happened to her parents was an accident, her hatred and anger ran so deep that she was beyond convincing. So she's just like this very one-sided, this is evil and it must be done. And then this episode did a good job to explain her actions and the reasons behind them, but also not excuse the killing and her violent behavior just like they did with Orland, but I think they did it better here. I was really surprised too and a bit sad when she killed her uncle, because it was nice to finally see Orland as a normal human being, being uninfluenced and untethered by the dark matter shard. His scenes with Grace were some of Chris Klein's best acting since he started the season. And I really liked the metahuman story of the week and how, one, Vicky didn't actually turn out to be evil, and two, that she feared telling her family the truth about her powers because she feared being rejected by them. I really felt for her and her family and what they were going through. And then for the most part, the A-plot nicely paralleled Nora's own fears of rejection. And I like that she and Barry discussed it and that Barry admitted that lying and keeping things from the people you love in the name of protecting them is something he has experience with and that he's learned it only leads to heartache and hurt. And while he was saying this, all I could think about was, like, season one Barry lying to Iris and how far he's come. And I did really enjoy Ralph and Cisco's subplot, Ralph butting himself in where he doesn't belong in the middle of Cisco and Camilla's date, and then automatically assuming Camilla had already met everyone was really endearing. And I like that we got to see Cisco reveal his reasons behind why he wanted to keep his life separate, and I was happy to realize it was consistent to how he's been feeling about his powers in general this season, so yay for consistency. And then the scene of him and Ralph eavesdropping on Iris interviewing Camilla and then trying and failing to act subtle about it later was really funny. And then speaking of Iris and Camilla, I'm really happy we predicted correctly that Camilla would wind up working with Iris at Central City Citizen. I already want them to be best friends, and Iris is long overdue on getting some good female friends on the show. And then finally, I actually thought Barry's reaction to Nora's betrayal was like the most on-brand Barry thing to do. It was like the worst kind of timeout you could get from a parent and was so extra and swift that I just assumed he'd run off on his own for a second. And then in the 30 seconds he and Iris really got to react to the news about Nora, I think Grant really sold Barry's heartbreak and sense of betrayal, and Candace nailed Iris's shock and denial.
I like that I can tell that you did this speech to text. Like,
yeah, Barry spelled B-E-R-R-I-E-S.
That's so funny.
What flavor is Barry's heartbreak?
Strawberry.
And Brandaberry.
Brandaberry.
There's a lot of Brandaberry thing to do. Anyways. things I like. I do like that Grace Cicada feels like a more fleshed out villain than Orland did, and it feels like this is what the season's big bad should have been like from the beginning. She is also more fleshed out than Mia over on Arrow. I'm still complaining about Arrow, by the way, because like Grace's hatred and hot temperedness makes sense when you see her history and how like the unfolding of her backstory throughout the course of this episode, and you can see what has brought her to this point that she's just killing kind of indiscriminately. I think the backstory of the meta that killed Grace's parents and then Grace coming back to build her now in the present all played out really well. Especially, I guess the lady's name was Vicky. Vicky's situation with her family and not wanting to tell them the truth. And you know, you could tell like when they're at the birthday party and, you know, things are getting heated with like Grace Kata, and that, you know, the mom is getting ready to do something and the daughter's like, no, I have to save mom. It's like, oh, well, this is going to be bad. Mm-hmm. And it was bad. And like the hospital scene, like the fallout from that just like killed me, because I could just feel the pain, the betrayal, like the daughter's like, mom, don't touch me. It's mm-hmm. like, I just felt really bad for Vicky. And like the dad's like storming off, and just all of this, the stuff that she was afraid of the most was like all unfurling and happening. And I feel like it's a good parallel that served both storylines, because it served the Grace plot, obviously, because it's part of it, but it also served the parallel to Nora's storyline, and the kind of, like, as she's, you know, Nora's been on this Thawne train for, like, so long, and she's, like, you know, to the point where she can't get off, because no matter what, she's going to be hurting someone, so Vicky's pain and the blow-up that was caused with her family and her being outed as a meta is kind of, you kind of get the feeling of what Nora's going to be going through when she gets outed. So I liked how they multitask plots in this episode. And I also like, in the main plot, how it didn't take long for the team to figure out that Grace was Cicada 2.0. Like, I felt like it should have been obvious, and they probably, like, figured it out pretty quickly, so I was happy about that. I like them finding the Thawne spear and Cisco telling Iris to do, like, Operation Shazam, and she knew exactly what he was talking about. It's like my little West 5 nugget for that will last me for, you know, another season and a half between the times when they actually get to interact, maybe. I don't know. But I like, and I like the two teams, how they split up with Iris and Ralph going to investigate, and Cisco and Sherlock going to investigate in another area. So I like the cross investigating between the two of them. Speaking of that, Ralph got to be promoted from Barry's understudy to actually playing stand-in Barry for both Iris and Cisco in this episode. Since Barry apparently can't do those things, Ralph is there to pick up the slack. Like, he's pseudo husband for Iris this episode, and pseudo best friend for Cisco, so he got a lot to do. I like that they were, you know, that Ralph went around Cisco and introduced Camilla to Iris, because, you know, he's like the most supportive friend for Iris in this kind of journey, because first he found her location, where her Central City Citizen will be located, and now he's like hiring her staff. Like, he found Camilla. I love Central City Citizen's number one supporter, Barry Who? It's clearly Ralph. But anyway, I liked all of that. I liked, in, on his side plot with Cisco, you know, Cisco's clearly struggling the whole work-life balance situation. And while it was a little bit annoying how obtuse Ralph was by intruding on their date, like, he was like, oh, hey, friends, just hanging out, you know, each other alone, and I can just slide out in here. So even though he's been a little bit obtuse about, you know, intruding on their private moment, I do like that his insistence on wanting Camilla to join the group was kind of a pay it forward kind of thing. So he knows what having Team Flash has done for him, and how being a part of that group and that family has really kind of improved his life. And it just kind of goes to show that they really are his family, and he cares so much about them. So inviting Camilla just feels like introducing her into the family, and he wants like that for Camilla, that the love and the family that he found, he wants for Camilla. So it's not even, he's not even thinking about it from the perspective of, hey, we're superheroes and this is a dangerous line of work and secret identities, and why would you bring someone that's not prepared for this life at all into this group, which is kind of like Cisco's line of thinking. But his line of thinking is more like, you know, he already sees Camilla as family, and he's like, here, join the rest of our family. So I think that's kind of cute, that, you know, how he sees Team Flash. And I also think that just Camilla and Cisco, I do agree that, you know, when they made it social media official, I'm like, wait, when did you date? Like,
right.
When did you date? What was happening all that time? But I do like that they, you know, I think they're cute. So hopefully now that they are social media official and she does have a job working at Central City Citizen, then we get to see more of her, maybe. And then finally, Sherlock finally fulfilling his purpose and cracking the code in Nora's journal. Yay, I guess. Getting exposed in front of the whole team aside, I think Barry's reaction was what made that for me. Like, he was big mad. Like, he was big mad. And that was really satisfying for me because I think that was one of the times, you know, when we rewind back into earlier in the season and all the shit that Nora was giving Iris. And I was like, you know what? When this secret comes out, Barry better be mad. You better be mad, or else I'm just going to say fake news and not believe it. So I was very satisfied with how, you know, Barry was very, very upset enough to, like, lock her in the pipeline. It was sad. It was sad, you know, obviously. Like, Nora, like, crying alone in the pipeline. But still, I was satisfied with the level of his reaction.
That was... his dramatic, I am too. And, like, he turned his
Oh, Barry. Yeah, I also enjoy that, like, if it was Iris in that position, he'd be like, well, I obviously did something really wrong if Iris went to Thawne, so I'll do better. But anyway, I really thought it was a solid episode. I liked, especially, like, as you guys said, how the theme of the episode lined up with all the different plots. Even the Cisco plot fit into this, like, share with your loved ones, be honest with your loved ones, or else, you know, you're gonna lose out in the end. And I guess that's what, like, Ralph was trying to get through to him, even though, like, it's a little bit early in the process, but it still fit the theme, and it didn't feel disconnected, I guess, or it didn't feel forced, if you will. Like, especially having Vicky's emotional angst parallel Nora's was a really strong choice because we get to see what Nora is going through, like, played out in a different scenario. And Vicky was very sympathetic, so it does help make Nora look a little more sympathetic, even though the scenarios don't really line up as much. But yeah, like, you know, like, avoiding the truth doesn't protect your loved ones, first off, because, like, she was, like, Vicky was saying she wanted to protect them, and obviously she wasn't protecting them because they were already in danger. And if they love you, coming clean will help them accept you, as opposed to having to find out from a very dramatic situation and or character named Sherlock. And yes, Barry's reaction at the end was spot on. It was harsh, but it was justified. And Iris's face in the background reacting was heartbreaking. Hopefully we get to see more of it next week. I also really liked Vicky as a character. I liked her story, and I thought that they did it well. Like, especially when you're hearing from Grace what happened to her parents, and, like, you're expecting one kind of meta, and then you meet Vicky and she doesn't even know that she killed anyone, which I thought was really interesting. And it's, like, a kind of creepy insight into how the CCPD used to run things in, I guess, the earlier seasons when we weren't paying attention to them as much. They are, like, sweeping metahuman murders under the rug because they don't want to rock the boat. Which I'm like, we should look into this. but yeah, I thought that was really well done. And also, like you guys said, like, we really saw, like, her family, like, we got to know her family, in that short time. And, like, I really loved when the daughter, like, rushed out to try to help her, despite seeing, like, you know, she's seeing that, like, your mom's met her, or, like, something's going on there. And yet she didn't hesitate to help her. But after the fact, she's still upset and she doesn't want, you know, to see her mom. So it's like, felt realistic, you know, like, in the moment. You're still gonna be there, and then you take a step back. And yes, Grace is for sure 10 times more interesting and much creepier than her uncle ever was. And I liked how his, like, slowly increasing horror over the course of the episode about her mindset and about her actions kind of, like, mirrored the audience. It's like we see her get more and more, like, get crazier and crazier, and then it's kind of like a mirror for Cicada, right? For Orlin. He's like, so this is what I was like, I guess, you know? And also he was like that because he wanted to protect Grace. And yet he turned her into this, you know, because of that. Now she's like this. So, sucks for him. Could have been something to reflect on if he hadn't gotten murdered by her, which was also
he paid the ultimate price.
Exactly. Which was also super surprising.
Reflect in hell.
Yeah, exactly. Reflect in hell. but it was really surprising. Like it was like, oh wow, I can't believe she did that, but also it was, like, good because I don't want to see him anymore. And also that really establishes just how far, you know, she's so consumed by her own rage, by her own. And also, like, you saw that, too, like, when she learns that Vicky's not really responsible, like, she didn't know what she was doing, wasn't on purpose, it's still, like, that just only fuels her rage more because she doesn't have a place to direct it, right? Like, all her life, she's been, like, preparing to do this for this reason. And now it's, like, that's not even, you know, you don't have a reason anymore. Congratulations. So then she's just like, well, let me just go ham. I'm just going to let loose on everyone. I don't even care anymore. So, yeah. Yeah, they did a really good job of explaining her without excusing her, which is always great. Also, I also really liked Ralph trying to help Cisco in, like, uncovering by accident the root of Cisco's issues. It really, like, it's believable that Cisco kind of, like, feels suffocated by all the things going on, like, by his identity as a metahuman and by the work they have to do, and he wants to see Camilla as a safe space. But I thought that Ralph also had a great point, even though he was being a little pushy about it, yes. But he's right, like, if you want to make her part of your life and you're going to stay in this life, she has to know about it sooner or later, right? The whole, like, I want to turn her into Spider-Woman or whatever. Like, that was just Ralph, you know, just Ralph being Ralph. And, like, that's the kind of Ralph humor that, like, I appreciate now. It's so much better than last season's attempts. So yeah, so Ralph was being adorable and ridiculous this week. But thank God that he got Camilla and Iris together. I am so happy to see Iris actually, you know, hire someone for Central Citizen. And then this also suggests to me that we're going to get to see them working together in the future, you know, hopefully at some point this season.
I have been kind of wondering, like, she said that Camilla was going to, like, take pictures of the parade. I'm like, who's writing this article about a parade? Like, is Iris, like, writing, like, a million articles for her own paper?
She must,
like,
be writing. She's the only one writing. Yeah.
What's going on over there?
That's true. It would be great to have just, like,
we have one employee.
A Central City Citizen, you know, episode. We should totally do that.
To cover all of Central City.
But yeah, I hope we get a nice female friendship out of it. And I also liked her team up with Ralph. Like, I was going to say, it's nice that Ralph is helping her through that divorce, you know? She doesn't have Barry to talk to anymore, so Ralph is there for her. Can't wait for their friendship to blossom into love. I'm joking, but since we like to talk about how Barry and Iris don't interact anymore, it's so nice that Ralph is there for her through that tough time.
That's why I said he was like a stand-in husband.
Exactly,
like
Mr. West Allen. And I'm also, yes, so grateful that Sherlock is done decoding that damn notebook. Every episode, like the last 8 episodes, he's been like, wow, can I translate one more sentence? So now it's over. He doesn't have to annoy me in the background. Yes, I also, yeah, I forgot to write this down, but I agree with Jess. Like, I also was happy that they figured out Grace was Cicada so early on. And again, it felt natural. It didn't feel like it was rushed. Like, well, we have to figure it out in this episode. It was like, yes, you have the clues right there. Piece it together. Great. And the Shazam reference was great too. So yes, I'm happy with how everything worked out in terms of plot construction. Although, of course, there are some things that I was unsatisfied with. So let's get into those.
Yeah, before I do, I do want to say, like, shockingly, pacing-wise for, like, the plot and reveals has been like, oh, we're not on episode 21 yet, and you're telling us everything.
Yep. Who knew?
Anyway, what I didn't like, I was not a fan of Sherlock throwing Nora under the bus the way he did in front of everyone, especially since she kept telling him to stop, and it prevented her from the chance to defend herself and explain everything to her parents on her own terms. And I also didn't need Monsieur Investigator to explain the whole thing just to give him something to do. But I think what irritated me most was that the writers chose to have Iris find him in the middle of investigating Nora and then having her do nothing about it. This is especially frustrating because Iris has caught him trying to pry into her daughter's life before, and it would have made more sense for her to get suspicious enough to eventually launch her own investigation that ultimately led to the big reveal. Plus, Nora wasn't exactly trying to tell her parents the secret over the course of the episode, and I think it might have been better if Nora was shown trying harder to tell them during a couple of happy moments between them, and then being interrupted and then being called out at the end. Sure. Speaking of Iris not investigating, it really bothered me that she was left out of the investigating that her entire family was doing. Even Cecile was there and she was the DA. Iris runs a newspaper now and she's researched Cicada and put her life on the line to get the scoop. So to not have her in those scenes really felt like she was being purposefully excluded from something she should have been front and center for. And then during Barry's speech to Nora about lying, it would have been nice to have brought up the fact that he had specifically lied to Iris, and for her to be there and say, yeah, lying hurts people, and this is how I personally was affected, alongside Barry, who says that he's learned his lesson about doing it to protect people. So that way, we would have gotten both perspectives on the matter, and then Iris could have still interviewed Camilla in addition to that without missing a beat. But the writers just don't want to be great when it comes to her doing all of that stuff. And it also didn't escape my notice, and Anon also mentioned it in our inbox, that Caitlin was missing the entire episode due to Danielle prepping for episode 18, but the writers still managed to include her for a couple of minutes in the end and right on time for the big reveal, too. So I wish they'd afforded Cisco the same courtesy in previous episodes to give him, like, a couple of minutes of screen time so that he would, you know, be there. And then speaking of Cisco, I didn't like that we were just dropped back into his relationship with Camilla just as they had become social media official, because the last time we saw her, they were going on their first date, and now they were in a whole relationship, and I would have liked to have seen some of that development before now. And then finally, I think I would have preferred if we had had Thawne explain his plan as a voiceover for his journal for like he did back when he was Wells in season one, rather than have another version of Wells do it if they weren't going to give it to Nora anyway, because then that would have at least had been like, this is my plan, mohaha monologue, you know? But that didn't happen.
Yeah. I also didn't like that Sherlock had to come in and steal Nora's thunder. Mm-hmm. It's like he had to, like, mansplain her betrayal to everyone, as if she, like, couldn't do that adequately herself. And it's like he couldn't help himself from making her look worse by telling a secret that she was clearly already trying to tell. He just had to, like, butt in and, like, I solved the case kind of thing. I guess that's a Wells trait, because, like, Harry in Earth 2 Harry was also kind of, like, just really, like, couldn't stand DeVoe being smarter than him, and that just made him do, like, stupid shit. So, clearly that is a Wells characteristic that is consistent across Earth and universes. I don't understand, like, why he couldn't have at least exposed her to Iris earlier in the same episode, since, like May said, that she was clearly already suspicious of what he was doing, and then have, you know, then get her on his side by showing her the journal, and then the both of them, like, confront Nora when she's with Barry. If Sherlock just had to be there, like, if it couldn't just be Barry, Iris, and Nora, then have, like, Sherlock recruit Iris, and then Iris go to, like, Nora and Barry. Like, they could have done that way. And it just kind of feels like what should have been a win for Sherlock as far as, like, cracking the code and figuring out Nora was working with Thawne, honestly just made him look more like an asshole, and that Nora was trying to come out and he wouldn't let her do it. It's not hard to make Sherlock look like an asshole, but they still managed to do it that way in this episode. So I really didn't really feel like, yeah, Sherlock, like, you know, earlier I would have been like, expose her, but then, like, when it's finally his time to do it, like, I just didn't like the way that they had him do that. I also didn't like that the convenient USB that Thawne as well narrates his entire explanation about Speed Force language for Sherlock to quote unquote find. I thought that was a little bit too easy of a solve, and I have a prediction about that I will save for later. But it just felt very convenient and very, like, what do you call it? Deus ex machina. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I also agree with May that about, like, Iris not being able to expose Sherlock, exposing Nora, or at least be able to take over Sherlock's investigation so she can see the truth for herself. Because, like, why else would you have Iris confront Sherlock and then not have Iris do something about it? That's not very Iris-like thing to do. Like, if she's on to a story, then she'll pursue the story. So the fact that she's suspicious of Sherlock, but she does nothing about it, is odd. It's not even just this episode. I feel like the last few episodes, it feels like Iris has just been there. She hasn't really gotten much of active plot. And it's just, like, a lot of, like, angsty shots of Candace's face. You know, and that's it. And I'm just going to add this, like, my Eric Wallace wish list for Flash Season 6. I hope that they will actively be integrating Iris in storylines where it makes sense for her character and not just paying lip service to, you know, Iris West fans by including her for decoration, but not for plot. Like, it feels like recently a lot of stuff that Iris is doing is, like, background, mm-hmm. you know, decoration, but not for plot. So I'm kind of tired of that. No, this is not, like, a true dislike, but it did amuse me how long it took for Nora to comprehend that the time sphere of the forest was the same time sphere in the archives. Mm. Like, they see, you know, Cisco tells Iris to do Operation Shazam, and they see in real time the Shazam scratch Iris is carving appearing on the one in the future in real time, and Nora's still like, oh my god, these two spheres have identical scratches. What does it mean? It's like it's literally being spelled out for her, and someone still had to spell it out for her. Like, you know, the audience is not that dumb. We can follow along that Iris scratching on one sphere and it appearing on the other sphere that they have the same sphere. We don't need Nora to be like dumbed down to tell us that's what's happening. Yeah. And then in addition to that, like, the journal entries between Nora and Thawne read like, you know, a teenage girl's diary. And like, when you, because we saw like screenshots, a lot of people were going crazy over like the one about Nora obsessing over her parents' love for each other and all that stuff. But if you see like the other screenshots and she's talking about like different things, it just seems very, you know, teenage diary type. Like, mm-hmm. Nora's writing to her boyfriend and not like a full grown murderer. Or like, you know, like she and Thawne are like having like summer parties talking about how cute her parents are. And like, this man is a murderer. Like, you know, it's cute that she thinks her parents, well, she likes seeing that Barry and Iris in love or whatever, but she's doing all this like TMI oversharing to the man that she knows her father hates and the man that she knows murdered her grandmother. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, it's more than just being naive at this point. And I feel like she's giving up quite a bit of information for very little of his help in return. Like, he's supposedly helping her, but she's giving up all this information about everybody on Team Flash. And it might seem like very innocuous, you know, mundane stuff to her, but he's soaking all of that up like a sponge. And it just seems very stupid on her part to share so much that's not even related to the task at hand. Because the task at hand is supposedly stopping Cicada. So mm-hmm. why are you, you know, fawning over your parents' love to the man that killed your father's mother, has tried to kill your mother, you know, has done so much bad stuff to your father? It's not even funny. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really make sense to me. And then on the other side with Grace, while she's definitely the superior, blah, 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 on the other side with Grace, while she is definitely the superior Cicada, I think some people have pointed out on Twitter as well. I saw a tweet saying, you know, when you think about how Grace is hell-bent on murdering Vicky and even going so far as to threaten to murder her husband, and how that would have put a little girl who was probably the same age as she was when she lost her parents and her parents died by a Meta, mm-hmm. in the same exact situation, you kind of lose what Grace's actual end game is, or what, you know, it kind of highlights the fact that Grace doesn't really have any kind of moral ground anymore, because Grace wants to erase all Metas for the pain that one Meta caused her, but she's willing to inflict that same pain on another little girl by taking away her parents. And so it's like, Grace, what are you doing? And then she also killed her uncle. Like, she killed, like, Orlin had the speech of all speeches. Like, it was the Barry speech that's supposed to, like, de-ice her heart and, you know, make her see the light or whatever. And she kills him. So mm-hmm. if her own uncle that she loved more than anything, that was the only thing that was keeping her semi-sane, cannot persuade Grace to give up powers, how is Team Flash supposed to do it? Like, this whole fucking season somehow hinges on Grace, like, giving her consent to give up her powers, and yet she killed her uncle, who was the only person that she cared about. So how is she supposed to come back from that? How is, you know, Team Flash supposed to convince her to come back from that? Like, I feel like it's gonna hinge on, like, the Nora thing, but still, you know, I won't find it believable when they do. I'll just say it that. I don't find it believable.
They saw her kill Orlan, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
She killed him in front of Barry.
Yeah. So,
dramatic.
Being witness to that, like, I feel like that alone should explain to them, like, how different the Dark Matter Shard makes a person. And in fact, how Orlan was acting also, like, taking out the Shard, which, you know, like, that's how different the Shard is. Like, the Shard is, like, controlling people or whatever is going on. So, I don't know why there even needs to be, like, a consent situation. I don't know why they couldn't have, like, discovered that earlier on. You know, like, more cases of, like, people changing overnight.
Like, with Joss.
Yes.
In the courtroom back in, like, what, episode 10 or 11?
Yeah, there was the defense attorney said that. And then it was just kind of, like, glossed over. Like, they're like, okay, well, moving on. But, again, we saw that when Joss didn't have the little wizard thing, whether wizard wand or whatever you call it, she was a much more, like, normal and rational human being. So, again, it's like, I don't know why they can't, like, go in that way. Like, this is, like, a situation where you can't really get consent from a person because a person is impaired, you know? Their judgment is impaired and they're, you know, literally not themselves. So, I don't know. I just think it's a little weird. Like, I'm not sure how, like, why they're choosing to go in this direction.
Maybe that'll be the prediction that that's where they're going. Like, they'll figure out that they don't need Grace's consent because the Dark Matter Shard is what's keeping her from consenting.
Yeah, like, maybe that's what they'll do. And because, I mean, they have, like, they did zoom in on the Dark Matter Shard when she was being a little crazy child in episode 12, you know? So, like, they are, it does seem like, it's a link, right? It's not like, oh, she's a little asshole and she has powers. You know, it's like, she's a little asshole because of these powers. And then if they had just waited to, like, just give Caitlin, like, a realistic, you know, Killer Frost arc, that could have been, it could have been the same, you know, they could have gotten powers the same way, and then that's why Killer Frost was different, but whatever. Moving on. So basically they have not been handling that situation well. Like, I'm not sure where they're going to go with it, but hopefully they will realize that this is more like a medical procedure that you're going to have to perform on these people. Get consent from their loved ones, I guess. Orlan definitely consented before he died. Let's go. Okay. Yes. Charlotte decoding the damn diary all season long just to go and tattle on Nora at the exact same moment that she was already going to do it herself. Like, you didn't do anything, Charlotte. This is just a waste. If you were going to do it, you should have done it episodes ago when you already had something. And not, like, right when you saw that she was real. Like, no. I didn't waste all my time decoding that for nothing. I'm going to reveal it myself. And yeah, I also agree with you guys that, like, Iris felt like she was being left out of the family investigation. And there was, like, no reason for that. Because she could have investigated with Ralph and then gone to the meta skating rink or whatever, you know, and then come back. Like, there was no reason for her to just not be part of those interactions. And then just to show her investigating Sherlock and then not, like you guys said, not do anything about it. Like, why was she investigating the investigator and then that led nowhere? It was just, like, wasted scenes. And it also, like, it also feels like Tom Cavanagh's scenes are being wasted, right? Like, does he get paid by the word or, like, by the second that he's on screen? And that's why they have to give him these, like, extra unnecessary scenes of him decoding the same page of a journal over and over again. I don't know. But I do wish that they had let Iris be more, like, if anything, if you have to put her in, like, a different subplot because for some reason you don't want her investigating with the rest of the family, she could have been in the Cisco and Ralph subplot more than she was. Like, it could have been, like, Iris saying, hey, I really need a photojournalist or whatever. And then Ralph being like, oh my God, do you know who is one? Camilla. And then Iris would be like, oh my God, why haven't we met her? And then they could, like, innocently go meet her, you know, and then have an issue. Cisco would have an issue. And then Iris and Camilla could get talking naturally about the fact that she's a photographer and wants a job, you know. But whatever, they didn't do that if they were just going to have her, you know, somewhere else. So
Iris would have understood where Cisco is coming from because she is in that life. So like her offering advice would have made sense.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she like been to in what that he's place feeling. In season one with Barry lying to her.
Exactly.
About her identity.
Yeah, she could have been like, listen, if she finds out that you've been dating, you know, like y'all have been dating, now you're Facebook official and you don't want
she
her.
She didn't have stupid advice about Patty and Barry.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So I don't know. There was no reason to not have her in that storyline. Just like, I mean, there's, again, there's no reason to not have her in the main storyline, but I sort of understand it because it was like already crowded. Like, why are all these people doing this? Don't they have better things to do? But why couldn't one of those people have been Iris? replace one of those unnecessary people with Iris. Anyway.
I feel like Cecile and Joe are sharing a brain cell at this point.
Yes.
Yes. They're attached at the hip, and that's literally why Cecile was there, because she has to share Jesse L. Martin's, like, Danny and Jesse L. Martin have to share screen time.
Yep, yeah. It is kind of weird. I don't know. It's like, I don't know.
I guess Cecile could give up being a DA, and now she can be, like, the CCPD psychic or something.
Right? Yeah, like, don't you have DAing things to do, Cecile? You have you literally have a different job. But anyway.
And a baby.
And a baby.
Who's taking care of the baby? Like I told you guys, Cecile and Joe get scenes, but Jenna does not exist anymore. Ugh, okay.
It's not Grandma Esther who's taking care of her.
She's like Jenna is McTurtle.
Okay. So what predictions do we have?
Oh, I forgot. That bringing up Grandma Esther makes me remember that one of my likes is that somebody, I don't know if it was Zach, but somebody in that writer's room figured out that black women don't know how to make sushiritos, but they do know how to make sweet potato pie. Like, thank you for giving Grandma Esther a recipe that a black person would actually have in their cookbook and actually eat. So, yeah.
Thank goodness.
And not something vague like noodle dish. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. Prediction is Cisco will change his mind and realize that he can balance being a hero with a normal life, and because Ralph has put that seed of thought in his head now, and now that Camilla will be working with Iris, I see the pendulum swinging the other way, and he'll let her into that life.
I think that's pretty accurate. And I think now I'm even more convinced about my prediction that I kind of blurted out before about Grace and the kind of workaround, that it's the Dark Matter Shard's fault. Because, again, like how she's already gone past the point of no return. So I don't see how they use the power of love to compel her when that didn't work in this episode. So I feel like maybe that, and the fact that you did have that DA in the Joss situation bring up that as a point, and it hasn't been brought up again, but maybe it will in the future. And maybe that will also kind of lean into Cisco's thinking and understanding about powers and having them or not having them, if he kind of sees the situation that Dark Matter made Grace this way, and so that powers can be used for good or for bad or whatever. Something will happen. I agree with you that Cisco will change his mind, because like Shailene pointed out, why, if he's hell-bent on getting rid of his powers, like why isn't he taking the cure yet? It works. He knows it works. They've already tested it on not only Shark Guy, but also on Orlin, and he survived it. So it works. So what's the holdup? Unless he just like subconsciously doesn't want to take it or whatever. Because even if it's just like, let me keep my powers until we get through Cicada, you know, next year there's going to be another Cicada or another DeVoe or another Reverse Flash. So what are you waiting for?
Yeah, and why wouldn't he say that?
Yeah. And then going back to Sherlock, didn't he only get a job because Nora found him? And then how did Nora know who he was? Did she get his name from Thawne? And if Thawne is the one that gave Nora Sherlock's name, then that kind of makes me question, like, what if Thawne had him in place because he knew Sherlock would eventually find the stupid USB that he left conveniently, and he would use that information to write out Nora to her parents, essentially fucking up Barry's life from behind bars in 2049.
Stealing his face.
And then stealing his face. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I think there is something there.
Yeah.
Because
Thawne is definitely going blonde. Like, it's not denied at this point. He's going blonde. I hope he's reverting. Come back, Matt. Hooray.
Yeah, I mean, I also, like, thought it was really weird that Sherlock said, like, I'm Thawne, or, like, if I'm Thawne, like, you know, he was, like, trying to get into Thawne's mind or whatever, but he definitely said that, like, 5 times in the episode, and I was like, I don't know, are you Thawne? Like, what is happening? Why are we focused so much on you figuring out Thawne? And it's been, like, several episodes now, so I do think that there is some connection there, like, not that Thawne is literally Sherlock, but...
It would also be, like, very humbling for him, because he's been this, like, whole asshole about, I can solve every case, and then he figures out, he's probably going to continue to figure out something is wrong, and then he'll figure out that Thawne played him.
Exactly.
And got him to, like, work out, and so maybe then he'll actually be, like, a decent human being in the back half.
Maybe, maybe.
We can hope.
Yeah. All right, moving on to...
Wants, like, redeem himself.
Yeah.
And then die.
I like how it's, like, redeem himself, like... He hasn't actually done anything wrong. He's just been super annoying. We don't like him. But he should redeem himself from that.
Clearly, his 5 ex-wives beg to differ.
That's true. That's true. He is a stalker. And for that, he should be stopped.
Yes.
Black Lightning. The Book of the Apocalypse, Chapter 2, The Omega. These titles are so unnecessarily long. It was the second part of the season finale. Lynn goes head-to-head with Dr. Jace once and for all. Meanwhile, Gambi risks his life to save Jennifer. Lastly, Tobias makes a major move to cripple Freeland and kill Black Lightning, requiring our superhero family to step up like never before. Salim Akeel directed the episode, written by Charles D. Holland. What do we like, ladies?
That Cutter got to walk away from Tobias unharmed and on her own terms. Really happy about that, especially once she saw what he was doing, all these things for his benefit and not thinking clearly when it came to their plan. And then knowing they took him down later, I'm glad she got to live another day outside prison walls. And I was surprised but pleased to see that Reverend Holt was still alive and well. I guess there was a reason they didn't show us his funeral. I know. And then Lynn beating the shit out of Dr. Jace was a great moment for me personally, because I'd been waiting for her to do that all season. And I think she had, like, a lot of pent-up anger and frustration, and Dr. Jace got the brunt of it, because that's where, like, the thing started before Agent Odell kind of came into the picture. Or, I mean, he was already in the picture, but he wasn't, like, as large of a part of the season yet. And then Jen and Jefferson getting to take down Tobias together was another fantastic moment. I like that Jefferson was able to talk Jennifer down and that she listened, because it was either, like, her father's life or Tobias. And then the show remembered to include his dad right there, right before they both sent him flying to the ground. So, yeah, that whole scene was amazing. And I like that we finally got the reappearance of the teleporting guy and Markovia making itself and its agenda known again in some way. Like, the final scene with the Pierce family also felt really natural, and it was really nice to see them interacting in that way. Jen saying that she was proud of Lynn, and Lynn not believing her or taking the compliment made me a bit sad, but it was, like, also a nice bonding moment between them. And then Anissa teasing Jefferson about his cooking, and then Jeff breaking down and crying tears of joy made me a bit emotional, but I was happy to see that they got that one moment to be, like, relieved and in each other's presence, and happy that they made it out of everything alive. And then yay for Henderson living to see another day, living another season. Yes, Henderson, this man's gonna die of stress. But and then finally, even though Lala didn't make it, I like that he helped Jefferson and Anissa in their fight before going after Tobias. I know he didn't know Jeff was Black Lightning, but it kind of felt like closure.
I don't think he's dead. I guess that's a prediction. Okay. I don't think Lala's dead. Like, Tobias just activated all of his, like, tattoos all at once. So now he's got a body full of crazy people that are going to be in his head. And I think he'll still be around. Mm-hmm. So that's early prediction. But I just like Lala's storyline. Like, he's only, like, been reappearing in, like, the last couple of episodes. But I kind of like that in this episode, like, he actually comes up and he saves Black Lightning, and he has that kind of moment with Jeff where he's like, you know, the city, like, Freeland needs Black Lightning kind of moment. And he's like, by the way, your partner's about to die, so get on that. I thought it was very Lala. And he's definitely turning into, like, one of, like, the anti-heroes and kind of one of the more interesting characters, one of my favorite characters in the show. I liked Jefferson and Jen, like you were saying, that scene where he comes in and he helps her and kind of talks her through it, and she kind of chooses her father over revenge, and how they both kind of beat him together. And, you know, she's cheering on her dad and when he's going off against on Tobias and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was really cute. I also agree with you about Lynn being the shadow Jace was very therapeutic. And I like the return of the Markovian assassin now that we actually know what he's there for and who he is. I mean, you know, we still know his name, but we know like what his motivation is now. And that Markovia is going to be hopefully more of a threat in season 3. I like that Jace didn't get away and she got like the worst possible option of the options that she had to choose from. And I also agree with you about Cutter actually getting to leave Tobias. This is the second time that she's left Tobias and lived to tell the tale. So if anyone could have done it, it's Cutter. And I'm so happy for her. Free yourself, girl. and I think it, like, just Tobias's mental health seems, I'm not sure what it means, but the fact that he does seem to be deteriorating in terms of him full-on having, like, conversations with Tori and Cutter being able to see that and see that something is off, something is not right, and her try to gently, you know, tell Tobias that you're seeing people that aren't there and having conversations that aren't there. That whole thing kind of, it's a little bit of a peel back of a layer of something that the show is not ready to pull the trigger on yet, but it's kind of a little, you know, a little nugget of something, and I kind of like that. What else did I like? The whole reveal, oh yeah, the ending scene with Jefferson and like the family, it's all together, and the fact that he just kind of like breaks down and cries because he's so happy. He's stressed out, obviously, and he's concerned and everything that's going on in Freeland and all of these reveals about, you know, Anissa and then Jin getting powers and everything. It's just been so much for him and all of that emotion. And I agree with the whole thing that kind of tears down like the whole toxic masculinity that men can't cry or black men can't cry and has to be strong enough kind of stuff. But he's very like vulnerable and open with his family because he loves them so much. And that was a really nice way to, I think, end season 2. And then the Odell showing up at the end and his laying out, him finally like laying out his plan about why he's so super uptight about the whole pod kids and developing metahumans to fight for the military. He's a little Haley, like him and Haley have kind of similar characteristics in how they approach situations. And he's not, even though Lynn hates him, he's not necessarily a bad guy. He's just kind of, it's weird the way that he goes about it, but then, you know, when he explains, even though, like, they have, like, a antagonistic relationship, the way that he explains the reasoning with the Markovians, you know, the threat coming, and they have their own metahuman army, and so he has to develop his own metahuman army, and we see that he's got, like, Khalil, he somehow collected Khalil, mm-hmm. and Wendy, and that other kid that we haven't seen since the beginning of season 2. What was his name? Omari, is that it? Omari or something? I don't know. Whatever. But the other kid way back in the beginning of the season, and you know, kind of, he's been in the background for a lot of the season, so it kind of like finally pays off that something is being built towards next season. And I was right about it being Markovia big bad in season 3, and we're definitely getting the Outsiders. So cool, cool, cool.
Indeed, cool, cool, cool. Now I'm echoing again.
Now I'm it.
I also really liked Lala helping Black Lightning, and that we get to see him as more of a fleshed out character and more of an anti-hero. And I was really rooting for him in his fight against Tobias. I also liked that moment when, first off, I loved Gambi trying to help Jennifer, and then Jennifer and Anissa having to help Gambi. I just love this little family unit. Everyone goes to bat for each other. And I liked that we... like that what that moment when like Lala came up to them and he's like, are y'all working with Tobias? Because I will shoot you if you are. Oh, you're not? Okay, you're cool. See you later. And I also like that Jennifer, you know, got to, like, her mind palace came back into play, and that, like, the whole little, like, holographic Perenna, or just, like, you know, mind Perenna, helping her calm down, even though it still ended up hurting Gambi. But it's nice to see her, like, gain control of her powers a bit by bit. And also gaining control of her own thirst for revenge. Like you guys already said, it was really nice that she stepped back from killing Tobias because of her father, and that then she and her father worked in tandem, and then you actually get to see a fuller extent of what Jennifer can do when she's not just going haywire. And that they, you know, they took him down together. They're sending him, you know, to jail or whatever. He's going the legal route, even though, you know, we have issues with that, I guess. But that being said, I also like that Lala got to be a part of that, even if he, like, sort of, like, teed things off for them, I guess. And I totally agree that he is not yet dead. He's not dead yet. So glad that Reverend Holland is alive. Also glad that Cutter made it out. And I liked how the former, like, I just said former, it's letter, but I liked how Cutter sort of epitomized, like, just how vulnerable Tobias is because he is his own worst enemy. That the way that he treats his allies is what leaves him alone. So we see that, and then on the flip side, Holt is, like, the embodiment of, like, the stronger together slogan, I guess, if you will.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
Just by, like, making his church a safe space, by, like, getting everyone through that night, like, with his inspirational speeches, with his sermon. So you get to see, like, why Tobias loses, pretty much, you know? Because he don't got anyone, because he fucked up, and he won't stop talking to his sister's portrait. Anyway. Yes, I'm also very glad that Markovia is finally happening, and that What's-His-Face finally had a purpose. Odell, Agent Odell, finally had a purpose. And I loved Lynn beating the shit out of Dr. Jace, because Dr. Jace deserves it. And Lynn had to let go on someone. She's got a lot of pent-up anger. Got a lot of issues this season. Finally got a little bit of release for that on the right person. So, what did we like less?
I like that. What did we like less? not having any follow-up regarding Anissa and her search for Grace. In fact, like, besides fighting, Anissa's emotional arc was the only one that didn't get any kind of development in the episode. And I think it's weird that she discovered something about Grace at the end of the last episode, and it went completely unmentioned in the finale. And it would have been nice to at least have seen Grace and where she might have ended up, because I think it would have nicely set up her story for next season and possibly included Markovia, since they were dropping that all over the episode. And then Agent Odell just walking into the Pierce home and giving a bunch of exposition. I know that, like, it set up Odell as, like, this is why I am the way that I am. But I think that could have waited until, like, the first episode next season. Because I would have rather actually have them... I would have rather that they actually show us the Markovians physically and, you know, what they're doing with the metahumans, rather than have Odell tell us about it. Because it doesn't really make for a scary situation if the writers are all talk about Markovia and they're not showing us anything at all. And I didn't like that there was no resolution or tie-in with all the South Freeland stuff that happened earlier in the season, or like a check-in to see what's happening with the racist principal. And I was frustrated that Lala had to die again, or even if he didn't really die, but like he didn't get a chance to take out Tobias at all. So he was, like, you know, knocked out really quickly. And then the reveal that Khalil was still alive and inside a pod was not exactly something that I saw coming. And then when I saw him, I was more frustrated that he was there rather than happy that he was still alive. Because I think they have some explaining to do with how he is still alive when we saw him die. And I'm also not looking forward to version 3.0 of Kennifer. And now that Wendy's back inside the pod too, I'm just like, let this girl live, let her out, let her let her try to have a life. She keeps just ending back up in the pod, and I'm just upset for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jennifer 3.0. Can you imagine if Jen, like, actually killed Tobias, and then Khalil was like, surprise, bitch, I'm alive. Like, that would be awful.
Oh my god.
One thing that I think was kind of a letdown for me were the Masters of Disaster, because they were supposed to be, like, these huge, you know, destructive, and there's four of them, so each of them are supposed to be their own kind of, like, titan, you know, to be like a master of disaster, and yet all three of them couldn't beat Black Lightning and Thunder together. So it's kind of like, you know, it was a nice little stretched out fight, but it also seemed like a little weak. Like, one master should have been like a good fight for both of them. So I don't know, like, I'm a little bit kind of underwhelmed. Or I'm just whelmed. I'll take from Dick. I'm on the Masters of Disaster. Jim finally got around to a place of, you know, working with her dad and her dad calming her down. But I did feel like earlier in the episode, I was a little bit annoyed that she went after Tobias and she shorted herself out. So she's like, you know, crawled up in the middle of the street. Gamby tries to save her, and something goes wrong with him, and he winds up being in trouble. And so when she and Anissa take him back to the tailor shop, and she's like, man, this is another thing that Tobias has taken from me. I'm like, no, this is not Tobias' fault that you went out. Like, what? Like, she's like, she does something wrong, and then she blames it on Tobias. I'm like, what about what you did? Like, how can you not see that you were also the problem here, maybe? So that annoyed me a little bit. And the whole surrounding situation with the riots in Freeland, started by the situation with Cape Guy in the episode before. And I know that Tobias was behind, like, pushing the riots. He sent Cutter out to do all of that. But I'm also, again, like, I feel like it was cheap to use Cape Guy as his launching point in the last episode, since they didn't really develop that underlying thread through the season of Cape Guy and making him someone that the audience cared about as well. So we're just like assuming that the citizens of Freeland actually cared about Cape Guy enough to like riot over his death. And I can't remember if the jumping point was that the police officers involved in the shooting weren't going to be charged or something like that. But it just feels like the riot doesn't really feel very like climactic or dangerous or anything like that. It just feels like it was there in the background. And I was going to say something else about that, but I forgot. I don't remember what I was going to say.
Well, that was my feeling too, that Tobias's little I'm a start a riot plan was just like, okay, and then what?
Okay.
Yeah, so I was like, I didn't spend the episode, like, I didn't feel like we really saw a build towards that. Like, I don't feel like there was ever, like the part where, like, I love the church scene where they're, like, all, like, you know, praying, but, like, usually when something's happening like that, like, something's going on outside, it's, like, really, like, oh my God, and there was not really. I was like, okay, y'all are gonna be fine.
And I guess what I also felt about that is, like, the conversation that led to between Jennifer and Anissa about, like, the moral of this story is, I'm still gonna be a vigilante, but I'm not gonna do it by myself. I don't know, I just felt like their conversation about it felt detached, and that I don't really know. There wasn't a lot of like heart behind their conversation and why this is kind of like the reasons why I am right and right. What I have been doing this whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so for me, like, the episode was really more like just like a race to see who would get to Tobias first, right? And how they would dispatch him, and not really like, will the Pierces be able to save the city or whatever. Speaking of, we didn't get any, like, I mean, I guess we already got our closure, and I'm just unhappy with that closure in terms of Jefferson and the school. So that's that on that. We did not get to see Jefferson, you know, take back the night or the school, you know, become a better place for students. No. So whatever. It's just done. We're just done. And also, of course, we didn't get any resolution on Grace, even though Anissa came to a really nice conclusion in the previous episode that you'd think would spur her on further to be like, I will go back. And I will tell Grace that I love her, and I'll tell her that I'm, whatever my name is, Thunder, and, you know, but no, again, nothing. She wasn't even, like, addressed in the finale. It was just like, okay. And I just feel like it's always the Grace thread that gets cut, which now, because that was Anissa's storyline in season one, means that Anissa's the one that gets cut. So, I don't know, it's really weird, especially in comparison to season one, where, like, I guess you could say, like, oh, well, season one is, like, Anissa's season, and season two is, like, Jennifer's season. And, like, in that case, it's fine, but I think, like, the build towards Jennifer's story in season one was much better done than the, like, denouement of, like, taking away Anissa's story in season two. So, I'm not a big fan of that. Also, even though I liked I liked Lala teeing things up, and I don't think Lala's dead. I was a little disappointed that we had all those episodes of build-up ever since he was reintroduced, and we had, like, all that backstory, and then he didn't actually get to do anything. Tobias was like, ha-ha! I am better than you! And I was like, oh, okay. Like, it would have been... Also, just because I want Tobias dead, no offense, I love Grandin, but I feel like he's played out. So, I would have preferred Jennifer to come, want to kill him, get talked down by Jefferson. They, you know, subdue him. They defeat him, right? They subdue him. They're going to take him to jail. And then Lala shows up like, you thought, bitch, and kills him. That's what I would have wanted. But alas, you can't always get what you want. If you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. So maybe next season, Tobias being alive will be what we need. Finally, this is like somewhat of a minor nitpick, but like Jace made a deal with for police protection in exchange for the information. Now it's just like stupid on her part and stupid on the police's part. Like, y'all just saw what happened with Khalil. You guys know this doesn't work. You can take him into custody, and also Tobias has escaped before too. So like, y'all don't have the range. You can't do it. And yet they still tried it, and then they immediately lost Jace to Markovia. Speaking of which, we saw Teleporting Man. Yeah, Teleporting Man from Markovia. We saw him like 10 episodes ago, and it took him like that long to teleport his ass to Freeland to take Jace. Like, why did he have to wait for her to be in police custody? He couldn't just like swipe her off the street? I don't know. It was just like, we want to see this in the finale, which is fine, but then why did we need to see him 300 episodes ago? Especially because he got that call saying that he was needed in Freeland. Like, don't show us that then. Whatever. That's just dumb.
That's another, like, little, like, line of thread.
Yeah.
I feel like that was another, like, line of thread that was left dangling for a lot, like, Cape Guy. Like, he could have been teleporting in and out in the background of scenes, and you're like, what is he doing? And then he, like, gets Jace in the finale. And that would have been like, oh, okay. But you see him once, and then you don't see him ever.
Right.
Until, like, the finale when he's supposed to matter. Mm-hmm. And we saw Cape Guy, like, once in the police precinct, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a wacky scene. Mm-hmm. Or that I'm not really paying attention to. And all of a sudden, in the end, I'm supposed to have cared that, oh, man, look who they did to Cape Guy! You know?
Not Cape Guy! So, yeah.
Not Cape Guy!
Do we have any predictions for next season, aside from the prediction we already had, that Lala is live? A La Live.
I still think that he ultimately, whenever they do decide to kill Tobias, that it's going to be by Lala's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one's just like the same that I've been having all season, that next season is going to be Outsider season and Grace will finally rise to prominence.
Yes.
And Markovia will be a big deal.
I approve of this message.
Yeah, same.
All right. Our final section. Doom Patrol in Doom Patrol Patrol. Following Mr. Nobody's advice, Jane takes Larry and Rita along to track down the 50s Doom Patrol, finding them in Niles Calder's School for Gifted Youngsters. Vic is forced to call on Silas to help him repair, and Cliff speaks to the Elder Stone, Papo Apapo. I don't know who this was written by, or who directed it, because they don't give me any episode descriptions. So, what did we like about this episode?
I really liked how this episode, like, messed with our minds. Like, at the end of it all, it was all about perception, and this episode definitely felt like a shift away from seeing the Chief as this perfect savior type to the team, you know? Because for so long, I think that's how everyone saw him, only to find out that there was, like, a whole other team he had that he left behind.
Yeah, exactly. He has a second family. Exactly.
And he didn't tell anybody about it. And I was actually surprised that there was a whole other Doom Patrol to begin with. And I think it was really sad to find out what happened to them in the end, because they seemed like such dynamic people. And at first I was like, do they not age too? Because they really, like, they started out in the 50s and they're still the same age like our new Doom Patrol. But then, you know, to discover that they are actually old, and it was just like a group delusion, was just really heartbreaking. And I really like that Rita really got some much needed attention, because her backstory has been the least developed so far. I enjoyed seeing how she tried to go back to acting after she became Elastigirl, and how the episode acknowledged, like, the harassment of Hollywood producers and how, like, that's been ongoing. And I like that the assistant tried to protect Rita after what happened, instead of selling her out, and that we learned about like a whole other woman from her past. Mary Beth?
Mary Beth.
And that like brings another dimension to her character because now like we want to know what happened. And I liked seeing that Jane got a little bit closer to unraveling some mysteries. Like we saw her fear and we heard the voice, which I assume was whoever hurt her when she was a kid. And also like why she has a room at the Doom Patrol mansion. I think that's like an interesting mystery. I thought the idea of a group delusion that everyone could see was really good and made the characters and us as the audience like question what is and isn't real. Mm-hmm. And while I was annoyed of him for most of the episode, I am glad that Cliff got through to Silas in some way so that he ended up loosening the control he had on Victor before he left. But what I really liked is that Victor is finally taking some of that control back and is going to be investigating his dad and finding answers that will hopefully clue him into like what was tampered with in his head. And I also really like that we got to see like a vegetable dinosaur man again and the news line about him being arrested for aiding and abiding. Yeah. I also like how the show has been like splitting the team up, but they all still get something to do. And then finally, I really like Joshua and how patient he was with the Doom Patrol. Like he was willing to give information to Jane, but he was still willing to let her find information out on her own. And he was also really protective of the three that he was taking care of. Mm-hmm. And I also really like that Cyborg got to openly be annoyed with Cliff because I think he deserved that.
Yeah, I really like all the Doom Patrol episodes, but I think it just in general, the fact that this was like a Rita episode and that her backstory is getting like fleshed out and developed. You said that, you know, it's much needed to spend some time, but they have consistently, I think, given time to every member of the Doom Patrol to flesh out all of their backstories, which, you know, Titans cannot relate. So, yeah. I can now feel like safe that even if Rita doesn't get like a Rita centric story, that one will be coming. It won't be just about Cliff 24/7 or Larry 24/7. That there is going to be some sharing. Even like you said with the plots, and they get split up quite a bit. So it's not all of the Doom Patrol doing one plot. They're split up into two or three different groups and teams. But each of those plot lines are very like well like developed in that everyone has something important to do, so the Flash can't relate. But anyway, I really did like this being very Rita centric and how Rita is tied to like the original Doom Patrol and to like Mento and how all of that played out. I like the introduction of, you know, her trying to get back into Bloom Pictures and she's still not really in control of her body and her powers. And so we already know that when she gets stressed out or gets like emotionally unstable, that's when she starts to kind of elasticize. And so her being in the situation with the Hollywood producer where he's like, you know, I need a little something else in exchange to get you this role. And so she tries to do that, but then she kind of falls apart and winds up suffocating him. And the lady, the secretary lady, being the one to like stick up for her, because I'm sure that secretary lady has seen a lot of shit for working for that ugly ass little producer dude. So I like the fact that there was some like hashtag feminism there with her protecting Rita from that. But I like how in general Rita's struggles with her powers and her talking to the chief about it is what introduces her to Mento and the Doom Patrol, and how the line that her mantra, the person that is breathing is me, came from her relationship with him and meeting him and learning how to get control of her power. So I like that a lot. Back in the present tense, I like that Jane was separated from Cliff for an episode, thank you Jesus, and that she actually got to spend this with like Rita and Larry and the Doom Patrol. She got the cool plot of the Doom Patrol and investigating them. That whole scene with like the group delusion I thought was really well done. It was very kind of creepy. Like it started out kind of almost too sunny and almost too cheery with them having like this whole school of like this like X-Men house of metahuman children that the Doom Patrol is teaching. And like if the Doom Patrol has been so, you know, these like legendary heroes, like why are they in hiding in the school? And I don't understand. And then you kind of see like the glitches that tell you that something is wrong. And at first you think that it's just like a prank. because that's what Joshua says. But then you kind of, it starts to kind of unravel. And I guess I probably would have to go back and look at it, but I feel like the glitch just started when Minto reconnected with Rita.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of like that. You could, if you went back and looked at when those glitches happened, there are points at which, you know, Minto's mental state is being challenged by the fact of like Rita's presence and her being there. Which I'm sure if Joshua probably knew she was there, then he would have been like done a better job of like keeping them like away from each other or whatever. Just like he did with when James started asking, what's her face? Irani. About nobody. And he was quick to like separate them. It's like, ah, there's something there. And like the whole, as you slowly start to see like all the threads coming loose with like Irani thinking that she was married to Chief, and you know, like Joshua telling Jane that she had a room there at the Doom Patrol, and learning that, you know, Jane learning that the Chief had this whole other team that no one ever knew about, and he doesn't even come to visit them anymore, which also they didn't know about, and the fact that she has a room there, and like the Chief and Jane's relationship has been just so like this father daughter thing that's been built on trust. Like she had in the last episode, we saw how he saved her, and you know, like that relationship with that bond, when he had to tell her goodbye, or he didn't get a chance to tell her goodbye, and all that was just very heartbreaking. But then in this episode, you see that maybe there's another side to it. Like, why would he leave her in a like plan on leaving her in a room in like this island of misfit toys situation? Like, he was planning on abandoning her, kind of thing. And I'm curious to see how that plays out. And I like that we still get pieces of Jane's story developing. Like, it was really, really creepy. It turned from like this really overly happy shiny thing into like the Shining with like all the puzzle pieces, you know, like cascading over the walls, and how upset Jane was getting, and that creepy voice that was trying to get to her. I was like very scared, and like I didn't know what's going on. Like the Minto, when his mental state like just broke down and everything turned like super creepy, I thought was really fascinating the way that they did that. And especially Joshua, because the Chief comes up to him and is like, you know your powers, whatever, is specifically for this situation. Or I'm curious, like, what his power actually is, because it seems like it's supposed to be scarier than all of the Doom Patrols put together, and I want to know, like, what made him stay, like, when the Chief met him, why the Chief chose him to take care of the other three, you know, the fact that the other three got this way because they went up against Mr. Nobody and failed miserably, and how that affected their mental state, like, everything about, like, even, like, the not the main characters, Doom Patrol, the not Doom Patrol, or the previous Doom Patrol, I guess, you find so much about them, it's all balanced in this way that just is very, like, interesting and fascinating and keeps the show going. It's not for plot, everything has its own, like, place, and they all work together very well, and you feel not only for the main characters, but you also feel for all of, like, the secondary and the guest characters, too. So, more on why I love Doom Patrol.
I really liked this episode as kind of like a mirror reflection of yourself, right? So you're like seeing their previous iterations without sort of even really realizing it. And also, like y'all said, a deeper look into who Niles Calder is and like how much he's keeping from the people who trust him and love him. And also, I was really happy that we got a Rita episode. And I loved that secretary lady, like you guys said, like it was so great to see her be like, okay, just go, you know, he had a heart attack, it's fine. And at the same time, having to see Rita degrade herself in order to be able to work, it was really upsetting and very, and resonated, right, with not just the times, but the news that's coming out about all time. So yeah, I also really liked the way that they had connected her to Minto. And like, I think that's how you do a comic book shout out that you're not really going to follow through on. Right. Cause like Minto and Rita are the ship, like, or a ship, like they get together and they get married and they adopt Gar and blah, blah, blah. Right. Obviously we don't have Gar. And Minto is now like 89 years old. So that's obviously not happening, But we got to see a snippet of it. You know, we got to see like how that could have fit into this Rita's life. And I also didn't like Mento after he, you know, read her mind without consent and then like was like, well, we're done now because of that. But I thought that it really played into Rita's own insecurities too, you know? And we've gotten to see, because like the person that she was, that was helping her through the situation and helping her gain control of herself, then turned around and made her feel like she wasn't worthy, you know? So I like how that, you know, she came into her own by the end and she was like, you were right, really. Like, Rita Farr is not a good person, but I'm beyond that now. You know, like, I'm not Rita Farr anymore. I'm a new person, blah, blah. So I like that. I also want to know very much what happened with Mary Beth, and I feel like it must be somewhat connected to that. Do you guys remember in the other Asylum-esque episode where they were trapped in the donkey and there was like a baby in a crib, and like Mr. Moby was suggesting that she did something, you know, relating to the baby. Something about the baby was like making her freak out. So I'm gonna guess that that's in some way related to Mary Beth. But I like how they're like dropping in little hints like that. And also, like you said, I liked the way that like the reality was cracking to make it clear that we weren't, like, it wasn't a real place, like something was off. And yes, like we, again, there's another one where you're like, oh, well, this is like a better version of the Titans title episode, but it's also a better version of the Titans finale episode.
Yeah.
Cause these people are trapped in their dream worlds, you know? And those dreams, at least for Arani, are reflective of something that they really do want. You know, like, she does love Niles, presumably. And she does wish that she could be married to him. And, of course, Mento probably wishes that he could walk and that he was young and vibrant and, you know, could still, like, seduce Rita again if he wanted to, etc. Also, I'm really intrigued by Joshua. I really liked him. In the comics, his name is Tempest. So I know his power is related to the weather, but I don't know exactly what he can do or anything about him because I didn't really read Doom Patrol comics. But yes, so he was part of the original Doom Patrol in the comics. And I assume that because he's still, like, I mean, I guess he's still young and just like them. So, like, I don't know. I have so many questions about this. Like, they got old.
He didn't go up against Mr. Nobody.
So did Mr. Nobody, like, take away their immortality-esque powers that, like, our Doom Patrol has, or did Niles not give it to them, and then, after the fact, be like, hey, maybe I should add this, and then give it to Joshua and these people, and our new people. I don't know, but again, it opens up many questions that I'm intrigued by. I'm not, like, frustrated by the fact they don't know them yet, because I feel like they're things that will be answered, because so far they've been doing a good job of answering things. So the Jane fear, you know, when Mento was like turning everyone's fears against them, that was like a really cool and depressing sequence, and I am very, very concerned for Jane now and what happened to her. I think it's pretty clear that it was like, you know, child abuse situation. Molesting or, you know, sexual bad abuse stuff. Yeah, very bad, very bad. I don't like it, but
we had this episode, mm-hmm. and last the Narnheim episode when she was freaking out when being in the church.
Yeah.
And like the priest and everything. So it just feels it's leading somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
it's not going to be great.
No, it's not going to be great, but it is. I do like how they are setting it up and how they are showing that. I was really like touched. Like, I felt really bad for all of the ex Doom Patrol people. Like, especially when that reveal happened, it was like, really, I was really heartbreaking for them, and of course the fact that Niles abandoned them. It was especially heartbreaking for Jane to learn that maybe she was going to be abandoned too. Like, he was planning to abandon her, not just because the fact that he would do that to her, but like the idea that she is just beyond hope now, right? Like, okay, well, right. There's nothing that we can do for her, she's just done. So I'm very much interested in how that's going to change her attitude or what that's going to do to her in future episodes. I thought that, like, Cyborg and, like, Vic and Cliff was, like, they had, like, a, like, funny dynamic, and it was, like, kind of fun to, like, see them, like, me, like, make deals, right? Like, be like, okay, I'm gonna convince your dad, and you're gonna hack into my daughter's Facebook, or, sorry, face hole.
Face hole.
Face hole for me. That was so, That alone was funny. Face all. But yeah, I like that Cliff actually like stood like, cause you know, he's been an asshole to Vic like a lot of times. And like unnecessarily harsh on him. But then when it came time to talk to Silas, he really did stand up for him and be like, you know, he was a hero and he like saved the day. He wasn't doing, you know, he wasn't just jumping in to just be an idiot. He really was doing something important. So that was nice. I also, his daughter having a new dad is totally what he deserves. So I love that.
That's his best friend.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Cause like, aren't we supposed to assume that they were having an affair? Like, at least that's what she wanted it to be like or whatever.
I think, yeah.
So maybe it was just true, you know? Or maybe it wasn't true, but he still felt like he should take her in, you know? And then it became true. So either way, I loved it. I'm like, that's what you get. So I liked almost everything, and that's why I'm talking about it. But, it was a really good episode. Good job. Yay, Rita. Oh, yeah, of course. Vegetable, mineral, animal, dinosaur man, whatever.
Yeah, I forgot that.
Of course, yeah. Like,
that was hilarious.
Yes, so, so funny. I love that in the background. And I like that, like, they actually reacted to it. You know, it wasn't just happening in the background. They were like, oh, that fucking, you know, I can't remember his name now, Steve, whatever. They're like, oh, God. So yeah, I enjoyed that. There we go. Just lots of fun little, like, Easter eggs. And just in general, great world building. Watch Doom Patrol. Okay. Stan Talent, Stan Doom Patrol. All right, what did we not like?
Probably Cliff. I know we complained about him last week as well, but he really does seem to have like one attitude, which is him being annoyed and negative about everything. I think if the show is trying to convince us that he'll end up being leader by the end of the season, they're really doing a terrible job of it, because he's whiny and selfish, and he doesn't even apologize to Cyborg for what he did last episode, and then acts like he did something so great by trying to save his life, and then just expects him to help him, you know, hack his daughter. And it was irritating that Cliff wouldn't even think to help watch over Cyborg while he was in sleep mode, unless Vic helped him. So, like, considering that Vic was actually scared of what could happen while he was unconscious, Cliff looked like the insensitive asshole for not thinking about the gravity of the situation or Vic's feelings.
Yeah. Like, I know I've had that as my prediction that Cliff would, this would, like, you know, Cyborg would decline and Cliff would rise, and that was the thing. And I do still feel like, overall, like, I know that each Doom Patrol member has their own centric episode, but Cliff has a consistent slice in every episode building his story, like, over the whole arc. So, if the writers are playing favorites, I still think Cliff is, like, the favorite story-wise, overall. But I feel less confident that he's being groomed to be the leader, because like you said, he hasn't really moved past go. Like, he's only had one side, and the only other side is that, you know, he likes Jane, but even that seems kind of selfish on his end. Like, it's a selfish like that he has for Jane, and not really that he's doing it for non-ulterior motives or whatever. And there doesn't really seem to be like a lot of things that he does for the act of like helping someone and not receiving something in return. So like his deal with Vic, you know, clearly Vic has some issues, trust issues with his dad, and is like, you know, look, I need you to watch and see if something happens while I'm in sleep mode, because I can't defend myself, I can't do anything, I can't see what's going on. And him try to turn that into, like, a quid pro quo moment. And he doesn't even, like, he even took Silas's side over Victor's. And he definitely doesn't know Silas. But he doesn't, like, whether he likes Victor or not, like, he does know Victor. And whether Victor's, like, uptightness and pretentiousness about, you know, being the hero is annoying to him or not, then I feel like just the fact that Victor feels uncomfortable with Silas should clue Cliff in to, hey, maybe there's something wrong with Silas, instead of like, oh, Silas is this great guy, I don't see why Vic has a problem with this. And then, like, he actually does leave the room. Like, Victor goes in sleep mode, and, like, Cliff, like, walks off because he gets upset. Like, well, you had one job, Cliff. You fucked it up. You were even in the main plot, and you still managed to fuck up. So, like, yeah. I guess it's refreshing, but that's my only dislike. Like, our only dislike is this one character in this one scene, because the rest of it is great, but Cliff is still annoying.
I third this.
And I know he's, like, the fanboy's favorite, like, if there is a...
Is he really?
I don't know, but I sense it in my gut.
Exactly.
Like, the worst character on the show is the one that has the most fanboys in his corner.
She doesn't know, but she knows.
I know.
Don't fact check me, I'm right. So I, no, but I agree. I did find Cliff annoying with Victor and the fact that he left him in sleep mode. And of course, this is just like left over from the fact that he even pressed the button in the first place when Vic told him not to.
Right.
Just let the man live. Let Victor live. And also, yeah, I mean, his whole plan to just like get into his daughter's Facebook in the first place and then was just whatever. Dumb. Like, you could have just, like, Victor's just in the first place, made a Facebook and then sent her a message, you know? And in fact, I know this works because my dad did this with a sister I didn't even know I had. So, he was like, can you find her on Facebook and send her a message? I was like, hello, this is your father. So anyway, it works, Cliff. But aside from that, I'm really like struggling to find something else that I disliked. I think maybe, if anything, I guess I kind of disliked that poor Arani was just like randomly in love with Cliff, and there's like no reason why. Like, I have no idea why she would be in love with Cliff.
Chief?
Chief. I keep saying Chief. Cliff. Chief. They're the same to me. Yeah, she's in love with Chief. She's in love with Niles, and I'm like, why? And so then it's like all the compliments he was giving her were like just because that's what she'd like him to say. And I was like, this is just sad. But yeah, that's it. I didn't really like dislike it, but you know, I feel bad for her. Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. You have some explaining to do, Chief, when you get back. So what, as I feel like we never have predictions, but what do we predict?
Well, like, I took back my prediction, so I feel like I'm, like, negative prediction, because I took back the only prediction that I had about Cliff actually, like, learning something. I feel like I'm mostly just, like, excited. Like, I'm okay if not having a prediction, because mm-hmm. I like the journey of genuinely not knowing what's going on with the show and being surprised about what they, like, the little nuggets that they put into each episode, so that's
yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I agree. I think my only prediction remains the same. It's always been that there is some nefarious reason behind why they don't age. And that will also make Chief look bad. That's all I got.
Are they in a group delusion?
Yeah, right? I mean, that's a thing, too, though. Like, right? Like, seeing this whole group delusion, like, you would think, like, wait a second, let me check myself.
Yeah. But, well, that's definitely what Victor's going through.
Yeah. With his whole life. Poor Victor. They're in, like, two different delusions, right? Victor's in the Silas delusion, and the rest of them are in the Niles delusion. And then the reason why Silas...
That's why he doesn't get any of them?
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't understand how you can't fuck
me. And Niles and Silas, like, stopped being friends. They had a falling out because their delusions, like, did not match. They're like, I want the delusion this way. No, I want it this way. Well, fine. We'll just make two different ones. We're not friends anymore. Okay. So, side B, ladies with gumption nominations.
I'm going to say Vicky for Flash.
Nice.
Okay. Lynn for Black Lightning.
Okay.
And
they cut her as well as like a minor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Rita for Doom Patrol. Right. But also Jane. I don't know.
I
thought it was more Jane. Even though it was like a Rita-centric episode, I feel like Jane played a more...
Like, active role. Yeah, I think I'd probably say Jane, because she was the one sort of leading the charge and, like, figuring things out about the... Although, yeah, I mean, Larry did some of his own figuring out, too. But yeah, I do think that Jane was kind of leading the charge there. And she was the one that wanted to find out about, like, she was the one that took the risk to find out about nobody's, like, follow-up on nobody's tip anyway. So, yeah, I would say Jane, Lynn, and Vicky are all good ones. So...
But I definitely think Lynn for side B. Like,
okay. Lynn for side B. I accept that. What do you think, Jessica?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We got Lynn, and then we've got
Lena and Eve.
Eve. Yeah. Lena.
Mia
Eve.
Has been erased.
Yeah. Mia has been, you know, acknowledged. Okay. between, I feel like I would probably say Lena as my overall one, but
yeah,
just for going up, you know, like saving James's life in taking the risk in the first place, right? And also facing off against Lex.
Yeah, I feel like Lena struggled with working with her brother and, you know, going through whether to use this or not to save James. Overall, I think she'll win it for me. But I also want to say, like, Eve, and this is really crazy because I don't even like Eve. But I just feel like, you know, like I said last week, like the whole long con of how long Eve has been undercover. And like I said, if Shane hadn't brought it up, I would have never seen her coming. I would have never been like, you know, because you don't even see her. And it's one of those things where I don't like, I think, May, you were saying that we should have seen more of Eve. But I actually think that it works better because we didn't see a lot of her. And no one ever thought a lot of her. And I certainly didn't think a lot of her. And I doubt, like, the general audience really thought a lot of her much at all. So the fact that she's been evil this whole time and was just flying under the radar, but she was always, like, making moves because she got to Catco and she used Catco to get to Lena and then, you know, got on, like, the Harnell thing and then used that and to get, you know, Lex brought in and have, like, all of that. But she played it off pretty well. So I think that she should be a strong contender for the Lady of the Clubs nomination. Like, I feel overall, like, Lena and her struggle is why I would give my vote to her. But I think Eve...
Well, I would give it to Eve, actually, because she was active in working with Lex.
Okay.
And, like, she knew she knew he was evil and she was doing it anyway. Whereas, like, Lena was actively working with Lex, but she...
I feel like Lena's, like, it's internal struggle versus the external... Like, yeah. Motivated, whatever.
Yeah. I think the only reason I'm fine with giving it to Eve. The only reason I wouldn't is just because I'm like, why is Eve doing what Eve does? Like, I don't, you know.
Right.
That's
yeah, the caveat. Yeah. But,
we don't know what her history is with Lex.
Yeah. But I do, like, you know, but she definitely has gumption to work with and betray Lena and then, you know, try to shoot her ass in front of Lex. So.
I mean, I think we can go with, like, Lena and give Eve, like, the strong runner-up.
A strongly worded runner-up.
Alrighty. Lena it is. Okay, well, thank you guys. Okay, that was loud. We'll try that again. Thank you guys for joining us, and we'll meet here again next week in a flashless recap of DC TV.
And a Black Lightning-less recap.
And that's right. There'll be no more Black Lightning, but there will be... Won't there be Legends, or is that not true? Is that waiting?
No, that's April not until April 1st.
Okay, just kidding. Soon there'll be Legends. But anyway, you can always reach us at DCTVGumption on Twitter, or ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, or ladieswgumption@gmail.com. And we will see you guys in 1 week. Bye!
Bye!